Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and this week I am not here with Dom. Dom was actually gone for the weekend, but I am thrilled to be here with someone who is finally making his podcast debut. I've been wanting to have him on the show for a long time. Very excited to welcome in the wonderful Brent Walgamont. Brent, how are you?
Colin, what are we doing here? I thought this was a video call. I have costume changes. I have things to show you. How can we work that in?
Well, Brent, while the people at home are not able to see us in video, I would be more than willing to turn my webcam on if that's something you would be, if that's what you're into.
No. I'm actually in my bathrobe right now. I knew this was audio. I'm just kidding you. I'm very happy to be here. I love the Dom and Colin show, although there are times when I listen to your lovely voice and I'm like, it really should be the Colin and Dom show. But, you know, be that as it may, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm glad to talk some Survivor, finally.
Yeah, you are not alone in thinking that it should be the Colin and Dom show. No, I'm just kidding. I think Dom and Colin just has a much better flow to it, frankly. Kind of like Ben and Jerry's. That would sound much worse if it was Jerry and Ben, for instance.
Yes.
Brent, first of all, the bathrobe is the official podcasting garment of the Dom and Colin podcast. That's number one. And second of all, Brent, of course, you just wrapped up your season of BB19. You're, of course, one of the live feed correspondents over on RHAP. A fantastic job you did with all of that. And also, you guys are now talking a little bit of Survivor. This isn't even your first Survivor podcast this week. You guys just did a draft, you and Taryn and Melissa, drafting these final 15 players. I thought that was a really good time. People should definitely go check that out.
Thank you very much. Yes, I was just going to say, talking Survivor twice in 1 week is not something that I do a lot. I loved covering Big Brother this season because it gave me a lot to bitch about. It was one season where I just had a lot of angst about many things. This season of Survivor, however, I know some people have said it's slow. I heard you in the last podcast talking with Dom saying that perhaps it's a little slower moving. However, I found it to be very old school in many ways, where we're learning a lot about the characters. I actually didn't realize until Taryn pointed out to me on our podcast of doing the draft that we have not had any reward challenges yet. And because of that, we've got a lot of backstory and character arc development with some of these people who you otherwise wouldn't have a chance to meet if there were two challenges in every episode. So I'm pleased to see that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think actually one thing I wanted to bring up was something that got brought up early in your LFC podcast, or your draft podcast, was...
You mean when I complimented you in your coverage of Big Brother All-Stars?
I'll leave bringing that up to off-air. Actually, we can quickly sidebar onto that yes, people, of course, we have been covering Big Brother 7. Week 4 just went up, and Week 5 will be up for the people on Tuesday morning. That was a ton of fun to talk through. Week 5 has already been posted for the Dom and Colin patrons, and if you are interested in finding out more about that, you can go to patreon.com/Dom and Colin, because the whole point of this, we're doing Big Brother 7 first, and the entire season of that is going to be free, and then we are going to be continuing every week with patron episodes, bonus episodes that are going to be patron only after we finish BB7. So a lot of fun covering that. And Brent, I know you're a big fan of BB7.
I am a huge fan of BB7, so much so that I actually direct messaged you to campaign for a slot on covering BB7 with you and Dom. So, I mean, it's just one of my favorite seasons of Big Brother. So much happening. Everybody's there to win. Everybody wants the money, which, you know, after what I just went through on BB19, that's not always the case.
Yeah. And I guess also along similar lines, not only BB7 stuff coming out, but Dom also did a podcast recently with great friend of the show, Pia Virolainen, talking through all the elections going on in Germany, a whole lot going on there. And I actually haven't even gotten a chance to listen to that, but I'm very excited to do so. Pia, you're like Dom, European herself, and knows a ton about all that's going on there. Dom, of course, very knowledgeable about European politics. So I think a very worthwhile listen. Definitely check all of that out on iTunes or domandcolin.com. But Brent, to go back to it, what I actually was going to bring up from what you guys brought up on your LFC draft was the recent season of Australian Survivor and how great that was. And what I think made that so good compared to a lot of the modern American Survivor seasons was that we got a lot of character exposition early on, and frankly, just throughout the entire season. And I know a big piece of that is Australian Survivor, just they do more episodes a week and those episodes are longer. But like you were saying, I think this season has gone back to focusing more on the players than we really have in any recent seasons.
Yes, and I do think that that's a good call on the show's part. I mean, there are some really, really fun people, a lot of likable people, no one who I really, truly despise. Even someone like JP, who's relatively bland, as I mentioned to Taryn and Melissa during our draft, his blandness in and of itself is somewhat entertaining, sort of like Cody on Big Brother 19. I think that Joe is annoying me a little bit, mainly because of the Tony comparison. Obviously, it seems like that's what the show wants, and I feel like he succeeds in giving them that, and I don't like that. I don't know if that annoys me as much as Ryan trying to be the new Cochran, but both of them are annoying me somewhat. Everybody else is on good pages, is on a good page with me.
Okay. Well, I think what we want to do here today, Brent, I know I'm sure you've got a lot of fire takes about all of these people. So let's go through, I think we'll do it just kind of tribe by tribe and catch up on where you're at on these people and where we think they are going to be headed, how they're looking entering this swap that we saw that's going to be happening next time. Because I think a lot of the pre-merge stories that we saw now, of course, they're not going to have any room to play out now that we're going to be into new teams. So I think a good podcast to have you on here to get some general takes on how these players have been doing so far. And let's start with the heroes. And I think the place to start is with the person I believe you took first with your first round pick in your draft that you just did. Chrissy has certainly been looking really, really sharp these last few episodes, to say the least. Why did you take Chrissy number one, if I am indeed getting that correct?
Well, I have to say that I am, and you're correct, I'm always partial to the older woman for some reason. I always loved Tina Wesson on Survivor 2. I always was a fan of Lil on Survivor Pearl Islands. I was always the person who's saying she got a raw deal in the beginning, and Andrew Savage had it coming when she flipped on him at the merge. So I always liked that typical character. Also, Karen in Big Brother Canada 5, cut from the same cloth, although certainly not the same person. I just am drawn to that person in general, and this is the first real season where it looks to me like that character has a shot to win, and a good shot to win. Mm-hmm. I liked what she had to say about her game. I liked the way the show presented what she had to say about the game. That gets into the editing a little bit and trying to, you know, parse clues here and there that you may or may not have noticed from what they were trying to convey as far as what Chrissy had to say. So overall, here's the thing. I like what she has to say, but more importantly, I like the way she goes about how she says it and how she says it to other people in her tribe, how she interacts with them. It seems like everything is relatively swell with her. And I also want to say really quickly that I do agree with you that, or I'm not even sure I'm agreeing with you, but I know you brought it up in the last podcast about how true or not the editing was in the first episode. Like, it made it seem like there were these four people over here and these two people, the mom squad, over here. And, you know, to hear Katrina say anything about it, there was no mom squad ever. It was just the show was presenting it as such. And I have to agree, I don't think Chrissy was ever in any danger whatsoever. I really, really feel like that she had her hands in a lot of different cookie jars, that the people on her tribe trust her. And I feel like she's earned that respect from her tribe. However, I will say really quickly, and this was something I did right as we were getting ready to come on the air, and I was actually kind of shocked about this, so that's why I decided to record it. There were two secret scenes on CBS. It's actually CBS All Access. That's why I couldn't find it originally, but luckily I still have my membership for CBS All Access because I'm watching Star Trek and obviously from Big Brother, where Ashley had something to say about Chrissy, and I want to play this to you because I think you might be shocked to hear what Ashley has to say about Chrissy. So here's Ashley speaking about Chrissy on Survivor in one of the secret scenes from this week.
Chrissy's a very smart girl, and, you know, she's a mathematician. She's an actuary. She knows numbers. Numbers is her profession. This is a numbers game, so she might have already calculated her way to the top you know, and this is just only the beginning. We're her first alliance of many. And, you know, she knows this game very well. She spits out facts about past seasons, about strategy.
And she goes on to say that she appreciates what Chrissy is providing in terms of being a good tribe member and an alliance member right now, but she is seemingly deathly scared of Chrissy as far as her abilities in this game and getting to the end. So this was the first negative interview that I have seen about Chrissy. Everything's just been, you know, hallelujahs and praises. So it seems to me that if she's not keeping her mouth shut about how much she knows about Survivor and trivia and past challenges and past votes in other seasons, I think that she might have problems later on down the line. What say you about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chrissy, frankly, for me, I'm with you that Chrissy, I think, would have been my number one pick, too, even if I had I think Melissa took Allie number one overall. I think I would have picked Chrissy number one overall because, like you were saying, I'm very into Chrissy and just her general presence on the show. I like just how she says the things that she says. And while I'm not going to say that Chrissy is Denise Stapley just yet, I'm also not going to say she's not Denise Stapley just yet. Like, I really think at this point the sky has been the limit for Chrissy. And actually, that's like you're saying, that Ashley secret scene that you just played is the first I'm hearing of really anyone speaking negatively about Chrissy. And it seems to me like she is not only doing a good job, but seems to be entering the swap on relatively good terms, as far as I can tell, with everyone that was on her initial tribe, which seems to be as much as you could ask for, I guess, with the exception of having a really compelling looking fake idol in your possession, which she also has going for her.
Right, exactly. The thing that Ashley said that really caught my ear was, we're her first alliance of many. And that, to me, spoke major danger for Chrissy's long-term prospects if Ashley is still in the game. However, given how much positive things she had to say about Chrissy, I do think that you're always going to go with the devil you know rather than the devil you don't know in a swap, unless you just absolutely cannot work with them. So I have to believe that, all things being equal, Ashley, if she got swapped into a tribe with Chrissy, would stay loyal to her, at least for the time being.
Yeah, as it's presented on the show, Chrissy has multiple times framed it as, I really like Ashley, so if we lose, it will be JP or Alan who leaves.
Right, exactly. And I think that that's pretty obvious from anybody who's looking into the tribe, as far as, you know, if they hear anything, if they are told anything from other tribe members in a swap about, you know, this is how crazy Alan was and he says secrets and you can't tell him anything without him going crazy. Also, I saw a secret scene, which I will not play for you, but I know that we're probably going to get it on the show soon, about Alan being hungry. He's going to get hangry soon if he doesn't get some food. So I do worry about those big muscle guys. You know, this is about the point in time where they tend to lose their cool a little bit after a week has gone by. So I do think that it's, you know, maybe not obvious that they're on the outs, but I think it's going to be pretty obvious that these were the power players in the tribe, Chrissy, Ben, and Ashley, and these other two, eh.
Yeah, I definitely am with that. Do you have any kind of strong take on that idol that I brought up? Is this, we talked about it in our last podcast. I didn't love the idea that it was just gifted to her. For whatever reason, I would have been more okay with this if it was Ryan's tribe went to that, or whoever found the actual thing on the scramble for supplies. They went to tribal council, didn't use it, and then they got to keep that to use as like a bluff going forward. For whatever reason, I would be okay with that, but it doesn't sit that well with me that it was just given to Chrissy and she has that. All right, Chrissy, excuse me, and she has that. Do you have any take on that one way or the other?
Yes, I do. Actually, this falls into something analogous on Big Brother that we call using production as a strategy. And it seems like Survivor just doesn't care about things like this. Going all the way back to Survivor Kagiyan, when Tony had the idol and was lying to people about how long it could be used for. And then the show itself, Jeff Probst, did not say what he normally says. Because Jeff always says, up until that point in time, Jeff had always said, you know, tonight's the last night you can play idols.
Trust me, I went on a 5-minute diatribe on it that week, for sure,
Okay, well, I missed that.
No, it's fine. I forgive you.
So this is the thing. I feel like the check was written when Jeff decided to effectively aid Tony in his lie using production as a strategy, okay, by not saying that this is the last night that you can play an idol, okay? And the reason Jeff said that was, well, you know, we know that Tony's got this lie and we don't want to out him, but I'm like, you're changing the game for somebody specifically. Like, right. You're changing what you do specifically. Anyway, so I don't want to talk about Kageyama. I'm talking about now. Well, my point being that the check was written in Survivor Kageyama about how the show and Jeff Probst were going to play fake idols and what you can say about them moving forward in the future. And now it's being cashed. That check is being cashed by someone like Chrissy who has a fake idol. I even posited in one of my voicemail questions to Rob that he didn't play, but whatever. Maybe that she could use this sort of idol in the future and claim it to be real because it has such a quality to it because it was made by production. Mm-hmm. I think I have less of a problem with it than you do. That it was gifted to her because, it could have been anybody. Everybody had an equal shot at it, and she just happened to be the one to get sick on the mat. I know she was effectively rewarded for, you know, not being able to hack it, apparently. Like, if she doesn't throw up on the mat, I don't know who Ryan gives that idol to. And I also agree with your previous take that, as long as Chrissy is in the game, let me put it this way, that something's going to happen insofar as that idol goes because we've just gotten too much backstory about it from the show. They're not going to tell us about some fake idol that doesn't hold any power, that's in Chrissy's pocket, if nothing's going to bear any fruit. You know what I'm saying? Right. So I feel like that sooner or later, that's going to bear fruit. I don't have as big a problem that it was gifted to her. Having said that, it just galls me when contestants are effectively using production as a strategy. But this is Survivor. This is not Big Brother. And so I'm just going to have to eat it.
Okay. I'm with you, by the way. I'm loving that we have Chrissy in that older woman demographic going out there and doing so well. And I think this is not anything that is some kind of fluke. I just think they've had historically a harder time casting that kind of person than normal. But I love having Chrissy out there and seeing her doing really, really well out there.
Let me also say really quickly about your Denise Stapley metaphor that I always saw Denise as a little bit of a younger chick. I mean, she was a mom, but I always saw her as she had an edge to her, and she was a badass, and she had muscles, and she just had a little bit of a harder core to me than I feel like Chrissy does. Chrissy comes off a little sweeter, a little nicer, even the way Ashley talks about her. She's the mom of the tribe. Everybody trusts her. So I want to see, can a woman like this, who is sweeter, who's got a little more honey in her, can she win Survivor? Because it's been so hard for women like this to win Survivor because the tribe at the end, the jury will come back and say, well, you were so sweet and then you lied to me. Of course, someone like Todd can, you know, be sweet and lie to somebody and then they give him their vote. But I do feel like there's a little bit of misogyny going on with Survivor's juries in history insofar as what can an older woman get away with? What can that character get away with? And what can an older man who just has different genital parts, what can he get away with? And I think those two things are distinctly different. I want to see, can Chrissy do it?
Well, how do you feel like Sarah Lucina fits into that last season?
I feel like Sarah Lucina always came off as, again, she's even younger than Denise. She was always younger to me. I know she was a mom, but she just the way her body looks and the way she carries herself, it always felt like to me she was more in the younger person demographic, not in the middle age demographic. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody ever looked at Sarah Lucina and said, oh, you're my mom.
I just meant the male-female aspect, not the mom necessarily.
I'm like Rob, like once a season goes by, I'm like, sometimes things are out of my memory. And I didn't love last season primarily because I got spoiled on who was going to get to the end. And when I saw who was going to get to the end out of all of those people, girl. And then, I got spoiled on a few things accidentally because, it happens sometimes. You read something, you're like, ah, shit, I didn't want to see that. But luckily, this season has been wonderful. The cast has been able to keep a lid on it so far. So I am here for it, and I can't wait to see what happens with Chrissy.
Yeah, well, do you feel like there is a chance that Chrissy could take she could like break bad, so to speak, and start being in there and betraying people? Or if she does get to the end and lose, will it be another case of people just not being willing to accept it from that kind of mom figure?
Well, it depends. It depends on how she plays it as well. I think if she actually owns her game, and this is so funny because I just went through this with Paul on Big Brother, but if she actually owns her game and lays out, this is why I had to do this to you, this is why I had to lie, this is why I had to be so sweet to your face and then stab you in the back, I had a purpose, you guys need to respect that, if I was a man, you'd be throwing money at me, give me the damn money. Like, if she owns it like that, I feel like she can do it. But if she starts crying and I didn't mean to hurt your feelings and I love you guys and, you know, all that kind of thing that people like Dawn did, it just ain't gonna work. Yeah. She's got to be able to articulate her strategy in a cohesive manner that some people on the jury can respect.
I think she definitely has the upside to make that happen. I think Chrissy, for sure, at the end of this season, we could be talking about having played a really great winning game.
Sure. And we also could see her go out in fourth place. You know, she could be somebody who maybe they're setting that up for us. Maybe that she doesn't even get to the end. Maybe she's somebody that the audience wants to root for. And then we get like Kelly Wentworth, and then we get the rug pulled out from under us. And we're like, ah, damn, you know, you could have had a chance, because she seems really cool. And I want to root for her. So anyway.
Certainly in play as well. Let's move over slightly to Chrissy, seeming to be her new partner in crime here, Ben. And again, I speculate that this could go back to literally day one, that this could have been the actual power duo within this tribe the entire way. Are you loving Ben as much as everyone else seems to be?
I am loving Ben. I just think he's very, very he's someone that you are going to trust in the game of Survivor. In a game where everybody is a stranger and everyone is plotting behind your back, I think somebody like Ben, who admittedly has served in the armed forces and doesn't seem to have a bad bone in his body, just seems like a really cool guy. I feel like you're going to latch onto that. You're going to want to grab that safety raft. And I feel like that many people are going to be kissing his feet, so to speak. And he's going to have his pick of the litter, especially if he has a ride or die like Chrissy. And I do agree with your take that this was probably the real power duo in the beginning. And they just wanted to maybe, you know, spruce it up a little bit in terms of the editing. But I never bought for a second that Ben and Chrissy were not close, that she was ever on the outs. It just didn't play well with me.
Yeah. I think that that story would check out if that ends up being something we find out postseason, once more of these heroes get voted out, that was a much more straightforward initial Katrina vote off than the show would lead us to believe. Ben, I would say, entering this swap that we're going to hit next round, is like Chrissy, where he seems to be on really good good terms with everyone on his initial starting tribe. And I don't feel like I can forecast a swap where Ben is going to swap super horribly, unless maybe it's like him and an entire group of healers that all got along well or whatever, but that seems like the only way Ben is going to leave anytime soon, right?
Yes, I think he would have to be really unlucky. It would have to be a situation like you said. I feel like he's just not someone you're going to want to get rid of, because he's going to help you in the challenges. And even if you're somebody on Survivor who doesn't give a shit about the challenges and you're like, I just want to do what's best for my game, he's also somebody that you're not going to feel like is demonstrably plotting behind your back. And if he's not doing that and he's helpful around camp and he's a general, amiable guy, then I feel like, why would you get rid of him?
Yeah. Do you feel, though, like Ben may just be benefiting from sorry, that's what we do around here, Brent. From a really good starting position, because I do feel like his starting position was really solid. Like, he would have had to do really negative things to get voted out of this hero's tribe early. Do you feel like when it comes time, probably like more post-merge, I would say, when the target is probably going to be more on Ben and he has to really start playing some real Survivor, that he's going to be able to make that happen?
I don't know. The jury's still out on that. I think back to last week when I think you had this big question for Dom, and it went on for about 30 seconds, and you said, Dom, what do you think of that? And his answer was, I don't know.
That's about right. That's.
And there was also one question that you asked him, now that I think about it, where you said, what do you think of that? And he was like, I don't know that I'm supposed to have an opinion on this. Like, who are you? Like, I have an opinion on everything. How can you not have an opinion on that?
This is what you get with a philosophy major.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, just for those people listening, I've listened to your previous podcast. You always joke about the fact that, well, we're trying to do an hour, and it invariably goes over an hour. Honey, you got one lucky gay with you. It's Brent Waugemont. I'm a talker. I got things to say about Survivor. This is not going to be an hour podcast. Girl, bye.
Well, no. First of all, I'm here. I got nothing else going on tonight, Brent, so don't worry about that. But we normally – that was just for like a really slow week. We were like, this could clock in around an hour, but we never, I swear to you, never once have we, before a podcast started, said, okay, we got to be done by this time, or we got to go a certain distance. We can't finish in under 80 minutes or whatever. They all just end up being right around 90 minutes for Weekly Survivor podcast. That's just how much there is for us to talk about on any given 42-minute episode of Survivor.
Right. Well, we got lucky tonight because I originally told you that I had to pick up my partner at the airport at 11:15 tonight. So I was like, well, I really need to be out by 10:30 or so. And you said, okay, that's great. And then we ended up moving his flight until tomorrow morning. So I don't even have to pick him up tonight. And I'm all yours, Colin.
All right. Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Ben. Once it comes time, you're saying could go either way, I guess, on whether Ben really could be in there as a mastermind. I would probably be with that. I would lean more towards yes than no at this point, but maybe that's premature.
I would lean towards yes at this point. I do agree with your assessment that he would have had to play really bad in the beginning. Just, I mean, in general. If you're the kind of guy who looks like Ben, has the history of Ben, and you act like Ben, you're not going to be voted off Survivor. You're just not. It's just not something that's going to happen unless you're totally annoying your tribe like Patrick. And even, of course, his backstory is different than Ben's anyway. But he, you know, doesn't have the maturity that Ben has. I just feel like someone like Ben is always, 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 like 90% of the time, going to survive pre-swap, would have to get really unlucky to get voted off in a swap, and is most likely going to make it to the merge and then probably be voted off unless he's a really, really good player and can move and be a mover and a shaker and get himself to the end.
Right. That's the thing is, once it comes time that they're down to a much more individual game, the target is surely going to eventually get pointed at Ben. And I'm wondering, I'm going to call this the Colby Donaldson effect, and I'm just coming up with this now, but I do feel like the cowboy hat is really disarming. It really makes him seem like he's much less of a threat. You can hide a lot of threat under a cowboy hat.
And it's not coming to me now because I haven't listened to him enough, but he does have a bit of an accent also,
totally.
Correct?
Yeah.
Yes, okay, yes. Yes, and I also feel like that the accent, hello JT, is very, very disarming to people. You just don't feel like people that have an accent, especially this kind of an accent, are very smart. And that's totally unfair to them, but it's working to his advantage. You're just not going to believe that he's going to straight up lie to your face. And he could do it. I mean, listening to him in his confessionals, he's certainly willing to do that. But I just don't feel like the people on the island, again, you're looking at the cast of characters, you're looking at the people on the island. Okay, these are the people I have to work with. I can't, you know, because we're sitting at home. We get to, you know, talk to our partner and your husband and wife and your kids and people that you like, people that you trust. These people are all stuck out on an island with people that they've never met before, except two people, which we will get to. But they don't know these people, and thus they're looking. It's basically base game. And by base game, I mean, you know, just does he sound nice? Does she sound trustworthy? I mean, these are just the questions you're asking yourself in a game like Survivor. Is it somebody who I get along with? Just, I mean, basic things that we take for granted in real life, not to mention food or water. I'm talking about just interactions with people, getting to know these people, and learning to trust them effectively with your life in the game. I feel like Ben's always going to have a leg up in that area.
I definitely would agree with that. I think that's a great point. Ben, for me, I would frankly say Chrissy would be the only one that I would definitely have above Ben if I had like a gun to my head and I had to pick someone to win. But I don't know if you're that high on him. Where would he be for you in your like winner rankings at this point?
I would probably have him in the top four, but I don't know that I would have him right below Chrissy. I just feel like that the danger for somebody like him post-merge is just enormous. And I do feel like that Chrissy is also willing to stab him in the back. I do feel like she's willing to do that. I don't have any evidence of that necessarily, but I feel like that she is, like, if she sees the numbers going one way, I feel like she's happy to go along with those numbers. It's so interesting with these two specific character arc or characters in particular, because Chrissy's Danger Time, that kind of a character, is always in the beginning of the game, and she seems to have gotten past that. But now, after a swap, she may have to encounter that again. So if she can make this little, you know, 5-6 episode stretch, then I feel like she'll be in good stead. On the other hand, somebody like Ben, you know, write him the check for the first 6 weeks of the game. I mean, I think he ain't going anywhere. But then once you get to emerge, then he's going to have to earn his money. So I really am interested to see. I really hope that they actually stay together, because I would like to see them continue to talk to each other and build a rapport together. I feel like them being split up might hurt this relationship a little bit. You know, if you don't see somebody, I've listened to Steven on Rob's podcast, Fishback, I'm talking about the fact that in a swap, most people go with their new swap rather than their old alliance, because these are the people that you're going to be going into a merge with. So let's hope that they stay together, because I like this dynamic.
I'm with you for sure. I think they will, frankly, both be there pretty long term, and I think they will remain a power duo for as long as they're both in the game. You mentioned that you think Chrissy would be willing to turn on Ben, and I agree with that. Do you feel like Ben would be willing to turn on Chrissy if it came down to it?
That's harder to say. I don't know enough about Ben in order to make that call. My gut would tell me yes, because he's a player and he wants to win the money. Someone like Ashley, who has voiced some negative things about Chrissy, I feel like if Ashley's voicing that, then Ben is definitely on to Chrissy as somebody who actually she might have some end game potential. She may not be somebody who I can just drag to the end as a goat. And I'm not even sure he's thinking of her like that. He may think of her as a peer. He may think of her as somebody who he trusts and is compatible with and can see himself going long term. He may be a bit of a mama's boy like me, who's, you know, he's looking for somebody like this to put his trust in, and really won't waver from that. But we just don't know enough about Ben right now in order to make a call. But like I said, my gut would say yes, he's willing to turn on her if he needs to. But I don't really see a way in which Chrissy gets targeted unless she's just flat out voted, if the numbers aren't there in a merge, or if somehow she is looking more appealing as a winner to a lot of people and they get nervous and want to vote her out.
Right. I think that's actually one thing that Chrissy has decidedly going for her, is if they do remain a duo, I would imagine Ben would be targeted before she is in a post-merge scenario. Let's move over, though, to someone you just brought up that I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about now. She, for my money, has gotten off to a much better start than I was expecting. Ashley, also on this Heroes tribe here. How are you feeling about how she's been doing?
Feeling really good, feeling better after I heard this confessional, because it was nice to hear her speak in long form. You know, you're only getting 43 minutes on an episode, and of course they have to spread it out around 13, 14 people. Plus there's a challenge and tribal council thrown in there, and she didn't go to tribal council this week and hasn't last week. So we haven't heard a lot from Ashley, but I really liked the secret scene because it showed me that she's thinking about the game. She understands the context in which she's dealing with other players around her. I also think that it's very admirable that she is willing to cut bait on the dick. Like, she's willing to not get involved in that. If that's causing her problems, then get rid of it. Because I saw the season on Big Brother, Cody and Jessica, love them both, but together they're not great together within the confines of the game of Big Brother. I thought Jessica's game was always better without Cody, and then when Cody came back, she was digmatized by him. But, and I know Rob laughed his ass off about that, or maybe it was a nervous laughter, I don't know. Rob's a podcast is generally a little more clean and a little more Seinfeld than anything, so, but I thought it was hilarious that he admonished me for saying digmatized and then repeated it himself later on in the podcast.
This is full Curb Your Enthusiasm rules, yes, on this, yes, podcast.
Yes, yes, but I do really like it. In fact, I like totally respect it. I'm like, you go, girl. Like, that she basically just said shove off to the guy who she was getting down with, and doesn't want to be seen with him because it's going to hurt her game. That shows me that she's hungry for the win. She wants the money. She knows this is her one chance. And I mean, I just I'm always going to gravitate to people like that, even somebody like Joe, who's currently annoying me, because they're hungry for the win. I don't know how many times I had to put up with people on Big Brother who are not hungry for the win. That's why I love Josh in the beginning. Josh is obviously the winner of Big Brother, because he was hungry for the win. He wanted to play, but it was all about the money. I want people who are there for the money, who are there for the win, and it seems like she is.
Yeah, on recent Big Brother seasons, you get like a solid dozen people out of every cast that are not really there to win.
Yeah, there's just people there who are there for jury, or I would just want to make I just want to make jury so I can make my house payment, you know.
Right, right.
I just want to get I want to get some Instagram followers. Want to, you know, whatever. I'll stop bitching about that.
Well,
but yeah.
Where am I pulling out of thin air? Did you make Ashley a winner pick at like the end of that draft podcast, or where did I see this?
Did I? I don't know.
Maybe you did. Maybe I'm making that up, but I feel like I thought you were like glowing on Ashley at some point. So I don't blame you.
Yeah, I am glowing on Ashley, but I don't know that I made her my winner pick. It's certainly possible. We do, you know, for much of the draft, I had my draft board laid out, and I had, you know, these are the people that I'm going to pick. I actually had like the first 10 done, and then, you know, the people at the bottom, I was like, whatever, you know, like, I mean, I'll decide when I get there. But Ashley, I mean, I don't know if I made her my winner pick, but I can certainly see a path for her to win the game. And by that, I mean that she seems articulate enough and confident enough and self-aware enough of not only the people around her, but also her her own way that she's being perceived by other people in the game. And I feel like she is cognizant of that. And if you're cognizant of it, then that means that you're aware of it. And being self-aware, I feel like, is 50% of Survivor.
Right. I would say if we were to put this in like Big Brother LFC stock watch terms, from the premiere, I would have said my big winners, like the people I would be buying on would have been Ben and Allie. From episode 2, I would have been saying start buying on Chrissy. And after episode 3, I would say Ashley is someone whose stock I think is going to rise.
Yeah, and I'm hoping so, because I want to see some more richly developed female characters on Survivor. I mean, look, I love Jeff Probst, but he's always partial to the sausage. He just is. It's a big sausage party with Jeff Probst. He just loves him some Colbys and some Ruperts and some Coaches and some Aussies, and you just don't hear him bring up women who are fully developed characters on Survivor. And I want to see that. I want the show to give them more screen time, and I want to see them play the game hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling like Ashley is someone you are more or less locking in for the merge, or do you feel like this could go poorly for her if she swaps weirdly?
Could go poorly for her if she gets swapped onto a tribe with Alan. I feel like he'll be nervous and paranoid like he was during the first day or two. And he will be looking for any reason to point the finger onto Ashley. I feel like he already feels like he doesn't have a great relationship with her because of calling her out about the power duo thing. And if he's nervous, and he's going to be, and he's also going to be hungry, then I feel like he's going to push the target onto Ashley and warn everybody, you know, regardless of what she says, she's in a showmance with JP. They're a power duo, and you need to be worried about them. I feel like I don't know if they're swapping into 3 tribes or 2 tribes, but however it plays out, I feel like she cannot be swapped onto a tribe with Alan, or she might be toast.
Do you think she does or does not want to be swapped onto a tribe with JP?
I think she does want to be swapped onto a tribe with JP. I feel like that she's willing to do what she needs to do for now, but again, it's always the devil you know, so I feel like all things being equal, she's going to want to be swapped with JP, because if anything, if word gets out about their showmance, they're always going to pick him off, not her. Obviously, unless they've been listening to Steven, and you always want to vote off the person like, you know, Ashley, the person who blends in better into the game. You know, somebody like JP is always going to be a target at the merge. Somebody like Ashley might be able to slip under the radar, Steven says, in the early part of Survivor, to always vote off the blander person, basically the person who is the better chameleon, so to speak. And I feel like if she gets swapped onto a tribe with JP, but also has, you know, Ryan and Devin and Allie, Chrissy, I don't know. It just depends how maybe Rourke, that might also be a danger person for her. I feel like that outside of that, she's good, but there is danger lurking for her during a swap.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm with that. Let's talk quickly about JP, probably. Do you think there could be more to JP than what we've seen so far, or is this just going to be running dick joke visual gags and stuff like that until he's gone?
I think it's going to be running gags until he's gone.
And really things like that. And we'll just wait and see.
Yeah, I don't see a lot here. I'm hoping he's – well, am I hoping? I don't know. There's enough characters on Survivor this season. I don't know that I even need to be surprised by JP. I don't know if I can handle that. I mean, I've heard great things, and I know nothing, by the way, so don't spoil me, about Survivor Australia. I've heard great things about this season. Taryn was like, everybody's wants the money. Everybody's going after
it. Tina Wesson wins. Spoiler alert.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I can handle it. If somebody like JP all of a sudden develops a character and is somebody to root for, it's like, wow, I have another person to root for. But, that ain't going to happen. He's a really cool, sweet guy who got on the show because he's, cute and has a great body. It's not anything. I mean, look, it's obviously a better body than what I currently have, but it's just not. I mean, I don't know. Well, let me ask you, Colin, what did they see in this boy to put him on the show?
That is a very fair question, Brent. He's not someone that I think I would have been advancing too far in the casting rounds. And actually, I would say JP at this point would be my front runner to. I'm going to call it like have a bad swap, but I don't even know if it's having a bad swap, but just be gone soon. I would say JP is high on my list.
Yeah, I can understand why they cast like somebody like Cole on the show, who is, gorgeous and has a great body and golden skin and a great smile. And, you just look at him and you're like, wow, you've got so much sex appeal. But JP is more like in the boy next door kind of look, as far as, he's not somebody who's just going to catch your eye. I mean, he's got a great body and he's very, very cute. Obviously, I'm in a little gay splinter group of people who like reality shows, and we're all talking about JP's ass. Like, I think I said on a podcast with Taryn that, oh, he has a good ass. And I was corrected by someone who said, no, Brent, he has a great ass. So, I mean, but that's all I can say for him at this point. And the fact that I don't know who made the call between Ashley and JP as far as, let's be separate, but he has been able to at least sort of sell that as well. So I'll give him props for that. But outside of that, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of there.
Well, at least he's got a great ass going for him.
He's got a great ass. Yeah. And that can get you a lot of places in this world. I know it. Look at me.
let's wrap up on this Heroes Tribe. Let's get into Alan, who along with, as I mentioned, I thought Ben and Allie had huge premieres, but I thought Alan was like the breakout star of the premiere, just not a winner candidate. I've actually not been loving how little we've been seeing of Alan lately. I think this guy has a ton of potential as a big character. Where are you on Alan?
I am very bitter that I did not take Alan when I had the chance. I don't know what I was thinking. I think I was like, maybe I've been listening to Taryn too long or something. What happened? I don't know. But my fans on Twitter were all like, how could you not have taken Alan after all the success you had taking Josh in the Big Brother 19 draft? And I really should have, because he's so much like Josh in many ways, because he just kind of is a crazy player who is willing to do anything and say anything, and he doesn't care that it makes him look like an idiot. He doesn't care, as long as he can rationalize it in his own head and he thinks that, well, I did that. I was trying to make a move. There were so many times where Josh did something. He was like, oh, well, I was trying to make a move. I was trying to put the target on somebody else's back. Alan speaks the same language, where he's always like, well, that may have made me look crazy. I'm not crazy. I'm confident. But that put a target on their back, and that's what I wanted to do. Again, I don't know if he was just being a total idiot and then after the fact is saying, well, I was trying to do that to put a target on their back, or if he was just a total idiot. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but it's very, very fun, and I'm with you in terms of Alan. I hope he stays around for a while, because I like – well, I'm just going to say it. I like someone who looks like him, who is a person of color. I want to hear him talk strategy. I want to hear how he sees the game. I want to hear more about his life and how he views these people who we trust. Why don't you trust them? Who do you trust? We just don't get a lot of that on Survivor. The Survivor casts 18 people, and you're lucky if you get one gay, one black girl, one black man, and maybe an Asian, and then it's like 14 other Caucasians. I mean, that's usually what happens. So this is my question. How would it be if Survivor cast, 14 minorities and only put three white people out there? How would they interact and how would they feel? Would they feel comfortable? Would they be able to relate to these people? I feel like someone like Alan, it's really interesting to watch him relate to the other players within the confines of the game, and also develop ways to trust certain people in order to get his big body to the end. I think the best thing about Allen would be if he's able to get himself to the merge, if he can be so pathetic, like, you know, I'm so hungry.
That's the best.
Yes. Very Austin-like from Pearl Islands. Like, I'm just incapable. I am sorry. I'm hungry, and my muscles don't work as well as they used to. Like, he needs to be that kind of a player. He needs to be very Tyson-like, you know, where he's just he's an athletic guy, but he's like, I can't really do anything. Very John Party from Big Brother Canada 2, where he's an obviously athletic person, but he doesn't seem to be able to do anything really well. Like, if he could be like that, I feel like he could really get himself to the end.
So fake it is what you're saying. Pretend.
Yes.
Shit. Okay.
Well, I mean, maybe fake it. I don't know. Maybe he's not very good at puzzles. Maybe he can show them, but he needs to talk about the fact, oh, I'm not very good at puzzles. I'm not very good at things like this. You know, I mean, like, let them know, you know, lie to them, or maybe not. Maybe it's true that he's not very good at puzzles. I don't know, but I'm just saying, say it to them to really get that in the universe, you know, like with Lauren talking about how much she's played center field this episode on Survivor. Like, you really need to be your own advertiser and really let people know, like, I really suck at this game. I suck at these challenges. You would think a big person like me who's played, I don't even know if he's telling him he played football, but you know, someone who plays sports like me would do it, but I can't seem to do any of this stuff right, and it's really, really hard. I don't understand their puzzles. Like, he needs to do more of that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know what? I feel like he will. I feel like he's smart enough to know that you're not going to be around very long if you're perceived as a threat at the merge, assuming he gets there. And if he gets there, I feel like he would do well to just really downplay his smarts, because I don't think he can really downplay his athletic ability very much, but he can downplay his smarts and also downplay his athletic ability through the lens of these specific challenges on Survivor. Like, he might be a good athlete in real life, but he's completely effing terrible at things like this, and if he can sell that to these people, then I feel like that they will buy it.
Yeah, to quickly go back without going into a long sidebar, we are certainly with you. We've brought it up many times on this podcast before that the casting on both Survivor and Big Brother US is embarrassing. There's no other word for it, the lack of diversity on the shows these days. But to go into, like, if Allen can play this kind of lame duck strategy well and somehow sneak through to the end, one question you kept returning to during that LFC draft podcast was, can this person win a jury vote? Do you think Allen could win a jury vote if he gets there?
It depends, and I hate being fancy Fencerton about it, but it depends on how much they know about him. I'm guessing he's not going to tell them that he's played in the NFL, and even if he does tell them that, he needs to make sure he really hones in on the fact that basically I wasn't very good. I didn't, you know, I was on a lot of teams.
Yeah,
I was on
a lot of former pro athletes talk about how bad they were at their sport.
Yeah, basically I was an idiot. I spent all my money. I got nothing left. I was on the practice squad. You know, whatever. He needs to be more like that. And if he's gonna say anything about his life, I said during the LFC podcast, I asked Melissa, because she took Allen before I could take him. I said, can he win a jury vote? And implied in the question. Implied is the active part, infer is like the receptive part. Okay,
right.
So I was implying in the question that he could not win a jury vote. And I feel like in the few days that have passed since we've done that, I am coming around on that if he can play it the right way. But it's all on him in order to play it the right way, because right now I feel like the people within the game and anybody he interacts with in a swap, they may not respect him if he's seen as such an absolute loose cannon.
Yeah,
you know?
No, totally. I'm very optimistic about Allen. For as long as he's in the game being a great character, I just have concerns that might not be for too long. And if it was in the end, I don't know if I'm signing off yet on Allen being a winner candidate just yet, but I would certainly love to live in that world.
I would love to live in that world. I am not there as far as him being a winner yet, but I am a little bit more positive than I was a few days ago, mainly because I sounds so narcissistic to say. I've listened to myself. I've listened to a few other podcasts. I listened to your previous podcast about him. And I just think that there is a slight possibility that he is the winner, only because they did a lot of setup of him during episode one. They've continued to set him up. He got a secret scene as well. In fact, I think he had two secret scenes. And he's somebody that the show seems to like for a reason. So let's see what happens.
I would, as I said, I would certainly love to live in that world. Let's move over to this healer's tribe now. And I think hearing you describe him before, we've got to start with Cole. I gather you're part of the Cole Patrol, Brent?
Well, I'm a part of the Cole Patrol. He looks better on the island, I have to tell you, because in his promo pictures and in some of the stuff that I saw beforehand when he's all prettied up, he had a little bit of what I call gay face. I don't know if you're familiar with gay face, but it's this like overly like plump lips and big Disney eyes and high cheekbones and perfect hair and, you know, jaw out to here. It's a little bit, he had a little bit of gay face. So I was like, you know, I typically don't, I'm not into guys like that. I'm speaking in a physical, you know, kind of attraction deal, but on the island, he's been roughed up a little bit, and I like that. Like he, and I think all the women are with me on this, and all the gay men, obviously, too. He's somebody who is very rootable, because there's a bit of a naivete about him that I find interesting, but he's very, very smart as well. I think he obviously had a few boner moves in terms of telling Joe about the idol and all that, and obviously not checking in with Jessica insofar as revealing the information that Joe had the idol to his other tribe mates. That being said, I do feel like that he is wholesome enough where people will trust him, and he is also smart enough, and I'm using that term a little loosely, but he's at least self-aware and strategic enough where he sort of understands how to play the game, but not totally. So I feel like that there's plenty of room for this guy to run. I am not certain if he is in danger in a swap. I would say probably not, but if he gets swapped onto a tribe with Joe, or maybe, you know, there's a, you know, four of one people, and again, I don't know if it's two tribes or three tribes or whatever, but he would have to be in a severe minority, I feel like, in order to go home. But he's such a likable guy, and even just following him on Instagram and Twitter, I feel like that personality shines through. Like, he's like, basically what I'm trying to say is he's not just a pretty face. He's actually a really cool dude. Like, he's actually really, really cool, and I understand why people like him, and people will gravitate to somebody like that. So I do feel like, on balance, he's long for this game.
Right. He certainly seems genuine, and I think, like I was saying about Ben and the cowboy hat being disarming, I think Cole is so disarming when he talks to you. Like, you forget about what a big threat this guy obviously will be later in the game. And I swear, if he had a southern accent, I would be like locking him into the final five. I feel like he's got virtually everything I could ask for going for him that I
yes,
could ask
he
for.
Does.
And and Brent, the comparison that I made preseason, I said this guy's got like Hayden Moss kind of upside, and I think that's actually, I'm sticking with that comparison at this point. For me, Hayden Moss is ludicrous territory. It's like, I have a ton of respect for Hayden as a reality player, but I really think Cole, if things go his way, he doesn't swap horribly, and he gets some room to play post-merge, could definitely be in there with a great chance at winning.
I agree. I actually think it would be very, very fun if somebody like this was able to survive the, you know, first or second episode right after the merge and actually get his claws into the game. That would be very, very fun for me. Obviously, it's fun to look at him, but more than anything, I'm very, very, I'm just very taken with his overall demeanor, and I think it's very interesting watching somebody like him versus somebody like Joe, because they just come from diametrically opposed perspectives in terms of how they present themselves to the viewer. You know, Joe is so he's strategic, and he's always talking about, you know, well, what chaos can I cause? There was a secret scene that I'm going to talk about. Let's just play it right now, because let's wait till we get to Joe. But there was things that he was talking about where he's angry to play the game. You know, he wants to get out there and strategize and build alliances and stab some people in the back. Cole, on the other hand, does not present himself that way. He's so nice and so sweet and so wholesome, and you just root for him. Even when he's plotting against somebody like Joe, he's like, well, we really could think about targeting somebody like Joe, and here's the reason why. Like, he's like Vanessa from Big Brother. He has to have a reason for why are we targeting Joe. Oh, that's the reason we're targeting Joe. So, you know, it's not – there does seem to be a method to his madness, and I – want him to survive in the game, but I am very nervous that he's just going to basically travel the same road that many guys who look like him before have and go out after the first or second episode of the merge and it's girl bye. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, I actually think you just nailed what I think I find so appealing about Cole on the 35th season of this show, which is while Joe is very clearly aware of the cameras, Cole almost seems to find the cameras incidental as far as I can tell.
Yeah, he's not a fame whore, so that's good. I like that. And more power to him. I don't know if I was ever cast on a reality show that I would be able to not be a fame whore, because I mean, there's, you know, you get on these shows because you're sort of an alpha kind of personality and you have a lot to say, and people like that tend to be very look at me, look at me. So, I like the fact that Cole's not necessarily like that. But on the other hand, let's talk T, Colin. I mean, I was like incredulous, like Don, where he was like, what did Dom say on your previous podcast? He was like, I can't believe a guy like Cole has ever questioned whether or not a girl was into him in his life. Like, it was just, you know, so that aspect to him, I did find a little bit like, I don't know. But overall, I really like Cole, and I hope he survives long into this game.
Well, let's get into that angle of it. We saw him bonding with Jessica, who, like you, Brent, is a virgin. Very interesting fun fact.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone knows that about you.
Yes.
Where do you see this relationship going, if anywhere, within the game? Or outside the game? Are you shipping this? Are you into Colsica?
By the way, I was doing nothing across the street in the bar when we were at Podcast House the last time.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Nothing was going on there. I don't know what you're talking about, Colin. Anyway, so yes, am I shipping this? I don't know. I mean, he seems to be the kind of guy who has his pick of the litter, so who knows if they really are into each other. I actually haven't really been following his dating life post-Survivor, so is he still kind of fooling around with Jessica, or what's going on there?
You are asking the wrong person. I have no idea.
I'm asking the wrong person. Okay, well, here's the thing. I haven't seen her. I saw Desi with him, but I've mentioned this on the LFC podcast, like, Jessica's one of these people that sort of blends in with other blonde girls who look like her, and I didn't notice her demonstrably there, so it's possible she was there, but I do know that he was with Desi in an Instagram post, like he was live video and they were together with some other people, so obviously they're still a little bit friendly, but I didn't notice Jessica, so I'm sure your viewers, your listeners will point out to us if Cole is indeed hanging out with Jessica still. I mean, look, Jessica is the kind of girl who I find very intriguing because she seems annoyed with Cole right now in terms of, well, you know, why didn't he check in with me when he did this? And I like the fact that she's basically like calling him out to us and saying, you know, like, he was supposed to check in with me. Why did he just go and share all this information, especially when we're not even going to a tribal council yet? Obviously, bad call on his part. Obviously, right for her to point out that she was upset about it. She had information that was then shared with other people without talking to her. I think that, ironically, may say something negative to her. This is very – I'm going to sidebar here really quickly. There was a conversation that Josh on Big Brother 19 had with Christmas where he said, you know, are you going to take me to the end? And she said, I can't promise that. So basically she was telling him something without telling him. Okay, so let's fast forward to here where we're with Jessica and Cole. Cole has decided to bypass Jessica and share this information without really checking in with her. I feel like that she might look at that and go, you know, I can't work with somebody like that who's that dunderheaded. You know, like, you were, why did we not discuss this beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, she got a confessional saying as much. She said, like, I'm nervous that Cole was so willing to spew that.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't remember if that was on the main show or during a secret scene. But yes, I mean, like, I don't know if that's going to hurt her in her, or hurt him in her eyes. And if it does, then he will have earned that scorn. Like, I mean, he should have checked in with her before revealing something like this. He was all too eager to play the game, and I understand what's happening. They've been there too long, and they haven't had a chance to vote anybody out, and they want to play Survivor.
Yeah. Jessica, for me at this point, would probably be in the middle of the pack. I certainly wouldn't say she's drawing dead by any stretch to win the game. I could easily see her being someone who swaps innocuously enough, makes it to the merge, and it's too late before anyone realizes that she's a threat to win the game, potentially. Do you feel like she has possible winner upside still?
That's tougher to say. I don't feel like we got enough of Jessica in the first episode. I'm a big believer. I guess even Michelle during whatever her season she won, I forget. Go wrong. Where I like the winners. It seems like the winners always have a little bit of a something in the first episode. And I know that Jessica didn't have enough for me. But I do agree with you that there is a possibility for her to take it to the end if she survives this upcoming swap, and I don't see why she necessarily wouldn't unless she gets ostracized from the tribe because she is with Cole and they want to get rid of or split up a power couple or a showmance. Again, all couples are not the same. Just because you're a couple doesn't make you a power duo. So it does annoy me when that phrase gets thrown around. I would not call Jessica and Cole a power duo. They're just a couple of kids right now. They're a couple, you know what I mean? So she has to make sure that if that power duo label is out there, that she sort of spins it the right way and says, "Nah, we're just good friends." And there's nothing more to it than that. I wouldn't sacrifice my game for some boy. That's what she needs to say if she's in danger during a swap. Like, how stupid would I be to sacrifice my game for a boy? Obviously, I'm not with him. Even if that's not true, she needs to say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as Rob points out, particularly, maybe Rob Cesternino knows a bit about this from personal experience. When people couple up on a six-person tribe, it does not take them long or much convincing to get people to come with them, and that's a very fast majority. Granted, that's not, you know, we're not going to be in a six-person tribe, or at least not these small tribes going forward, but I think within a six-person tribe, I at least understand why people would be concerned about just the threat of any two people linking up. That you're almost to halfway to the tribe, of an alliance of half the tribe at that point.
Right. I do agree that within a six-person tribe, it's something to be wary of. However, obviously, they're going to swap in the next episode. I don't know if they're going – it'd be interesting if they do three tribes still and it's like 5-5-5. I mean, that would be – I'd kind of be here for that. I don't know about you, but I'd kind of be here for that.
I mean, just what? Quickly, my yes. concern with that
yes. –
and I am – just because I'm always so terrified, and Brent, hopefully after BB19, you will understand what I'm getting at – with people throwing these challenges. And I know I was always such a big advocate for throwing, but I think there are going to be a lot of scenarios where a fluke swap draw will happen and a tight group of three will automatically just have majority on their new group of five. And they should just always go to tribal council and they will probably know that.
All right. Well, I can understand that. However, luck's a part of Survivor, honey.
Sure.
So you gotta hold on to your hats, you know, when you're pulling a number out of the bag or a chip or whatever the hell out of the buff. I feel like that's the game. So you gotta get a little lucky to win Survivor. But on the other hand, if it is just two tribes and they go down to like what I think there's 15 people left in the game, so like 7-7 or 7-8 or something like that, it would be also fine for me as well. I don't know. Swaps for me is more about grabbing onto something that feels comfortable for you. So more than anything, I feel like if Jessica is there with somebody like Cole or even somebody like Rourke or something, she's going to want to grab that. And even somebody like Joe, I feel like that she could work with Joe. He may not want to work with her, but she could work with him in terms of trying to survive in the middle of a swap and feeling, you know, because you're going to be paranoid. Again, like I said, it's swap. It's like day one all over again. You have to build new relationships with people. You're not safe in the group that you were in. Because even the people who were on the bottom probably felt like they were at least a little bit safe, you know, in these, because no one's going to tribal council, obviously,
yeah.
after when they're getting ready to go to the beach for the tribe swap. So I feel like everybody will be relatively comfortable. Even somebody like Dr. Mike, who obviously is in potential danger, I feel like he will also be like, oh my God, we're swapping. Like, no, I don't know if anybody really, really, really wants to swap right now. So it's going to be interesting to see who adapts well to the swap and who it causes utter chaos for.
That's a really interesting point. I don't know if anyone is sitting there like Aubrey often was last season, or like Spencer was often on Second Chance, like, please God, let us swap tomorrow and ends
yes.
up getting there. I think maybe everyone would be happy to continue playing on, but I actually wanted to ask you, Brent, how you thought the state of each of these three tribes would impact that swap, and I think you just hit on a good segue into that, which is we haven't seen these healers go to a tribal council as such, as a group of six yet. And on one hand, they haven't had to outright betray anyone on their tribe. They shouldn't have any major reason to feel negatively or like they can't trust anyone because they haven't seen anyone like vote against them necessarily. At the same time, they haven't proven their loyalty to each other the same way this group of hustlers who've gone now and voted two people out unanimously have, entering a swap. And meanwhile, the heroes seem to be all over the place. It doesn't seem like there's any cohesive alliance in place over there, at least as far as I can tell. So how do you feel like those three different states, you know, sight unseen on how the swap tribe actually goes, do you feel like any of those three tribes just has an inherent advantage given their dynamic entering the swap?
I feel like the hustlers and the healers have a natural dynamic where I do feel like they'll succeed if they're swapped together. I don't feel like that they would necessarily turn on each other. You know, there is a possibility that Cole and Joe might have something going on if he wants to get rid of that idol or if he feels in danger. But I feel like they're more that it's also very likely that they would want to work together. Like, you know, hey, we're together in this swap. Like, we don't want to turn our backs on each other. And, you know, you have an idol and Joe knows that Cole knows he has an idol. So Joe's going to want to be nice to Cole because he doesn't want him to out the fact that he has an idol to the rest of the tribe. So I feel like that there may be a chance that they would work together. So I don't feel like that anybody's going to be targeting each other necessarily in a swap. It's not going to be like, oh, my God, now's my chance. I don't feel like that's going to happen. The one exception to that, and I talked about this on the LFC podcast, is Lauren. And what I am concerned about with Lauren is that Patrick, in his interview, stressed multiple times, Lauren should have been the one to go home. He said it in such a way that it makes me, and this is just my speculation, nothing else, it makes me think that she's going to be the cause of one of those three people's downfall, either Allie, Ryan, or Devin, that she might be the cause of one of them leaving the game. Basically, they should have got rid of her instead of him. He's trying to tell us that, and now they're going to have to pay the price in a swap like this. And I can see Lauren moving over to somebody else in a tribe because listening to her secret scenes, and I know we're talking about her when we're supposed to be talking about the Hero tribe, but just in general, we're talking about the tribe, so I'm going to talk about her real quick, her overall demeanor. She feels like a fish out of water. I mean, she does enjoy Allie and she does like her, but she does not relate to these people. She does not feel like she has anything in common with these people. So I do feel like that out of everybody amongst those two tribes, the healers and the hustlers, Lauren is the only person who I feel like would stab anybody back, not just because of what Patrick said, but also because of what she said during her secret scenes. And I feel like she would be somebody who would interact with somebody like an older person, like a Chrissy. Like, I'm here for a Chrissy and Lauren final two, or Ben, or even Joe. I feel like she might relate more to somebody like that. So she could definitely jump ship. The Heroes tribe, on the other hand, is the one tribe that I think is just going to totally disintegrate during a swap, and I don't have much faith in their ability to stay cohesive, whether or not they have the numbers or not.
Yeah, it is just really interesting in general that every vote has been unanimous, right? So no one left in the game entering the swap has cast a vote against anyone else who is still in the game.
Right. And that is definitely something that people hold on to. I will never, ever get over how much Julia held on to that crossed out vote that Aubrey put down at her tribal council and just took that to her grave, basically, in the game. It was just something that she could not forgive, even though she didn't even technically vote for her. So, you know, actually, like somebody who actually casts a vote for you, like I really feel like that's something where you're just – it's very hard to forgive that. I mean, some people do better than others, but, you know, it's something that's very, very hard to forgive. And given that the healers haven't had to cast a vote against each other, I feel like that's a benefit to them.
Well, in fairness, and obviously love Aubrey more than basically anyone else who's ever played Survivor, but the week that that happened, Dom and I were both adamant, like, you rip that ballot up as soon as you decide you're changing your vote. There is no way you submit the ballot with the vote crossed out. There is absolutely no way you ever drop that in the bucket.
Right, or I thought she could have, even if they won't give her another parchment.
Rip it up. You make them give you another parchment. There is no way that ballot goes in the bucket.
I know. I thought she could have, like, you know, colored it all in and made, like, a cloud of it if, like, she was, like, determined to use that parchment. There was something to do. Again, I don't want to talk about Aubrey, but, again, what I'm trying to say is, like, just her thinking about voting for Julia got Julia to never trust Aubrey again. Julia may be a special case, but I do feel like that on balance, people are going to hold that against you if you cast a vote against somebody. But given that nobody currently has done that in the game, there's a lot of room to play here.
Yeah. Totally. So I guess let's someone who's come up a little bit, and I'm curious to hear more of what you have to say about him. Joe, who is out here doing his best Tony impression, seems to be the general consensus. Where are you on that? And just the similarities to Tony and Joe being what seems to be like just yet another in this new Survivor archetype almost.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to come around on him a little bit. Like I said, he's annoying me because I don't, like, I saw it done the first time. I've seen that story before, and Tony did it better. You know what I mean? I don't need to see somebody else try to be Tony. Now, I'm sure Joe will contend, and his Twitter or in social media says enough, like, he's not trying to be Tony. This just is who he is. On the other hand, they knew what they were getting when they cast a guy like this. So I feel like he's just going to follow in the footsteps of Tony. As I made mention on the LFC podcast, now that there is a specific way that they are hiding the idols, if Joe gets swapped onto the Hustler or the Hero Beach, he's going to find an idol in 2 minutes. I mean, he's gonna know. He probably won't even need to look for the damn clue, Colin. Like, he's just going to go to the well in the direction of the ocean and dig right there, and there's probably an idol there.
Yeah,
I mean,
if it's not the well, it's some other landmark, right?
Yes, yes. They probably hit him all in the same damn place, and he's somebody who could go on a shopping spree right now. If they had two swaps and he was able to go to every other beach, he could probably pick up 3 idols. So I'm sort of hoping that he lands on the same beach, because I do not want to see a player who basically is Tony reincarnated get 2 idols within the game, because I do feel like he'll be somewhat unstoppable then. On the other hand, I feel like it's sort of bound to happen. On the other hand, somebody like Cole and even Jessica, if he's told her, and frankly, we don't know how much information Cole has divulged to other people.
He seems to be pretty loose-lipped about important things, yeah.
Yes. Has he told everybody else on the tribe where the idol was found? I mean, did they? Because that would be, you know, you got nothing else to talk about out there. They're obviously going to say, well, how do you know that he has an idol? Oh, we found it together. Oh, where did you find it?
Yeah.
So do all of these people. I mean, I think we at least know that Cole and Jessica know where the idol was found. And so if they get swapped onto a new beach, they need to make a run for it and make sure that they get that idol first, because I feel like they're all going to be in the same place. As far as Joe in general, I feel like he will do well to calm down and be able to play the game. Once he's able to get to a tribal council and vote, I feel like he will play a little bit better. He was the other person who I snagged a little bit of his secret scene on CBS All Access, so I just want to play a snippet of that for you now, because this really does tell you what Steven was talking about on RHAP, about how when you don't go to tribal council, you start to go a little bit stir crazy. This is Joe.
This is not a game. This is too easy. I did not come to Survivor to not go to tribal council. I mean, we won 4 in a row. All right, it's probably going to be 5 in a row. Things haven't got ugly. Like, it needs to get ugly. I feel comfortable when chaos is running around, when people are stressed out.
So, I mean, the thing that really I was taken with was, honey, he's annoyed that they're winning right now. Like, he's pissed off. Like, you could hear it in his voice. Like, he's like, so we won 4 in a row. It's probably going to be 5 in a row. Like, could we just – he's like Donald Trump. Like he's like, you're going to be sick of winning. I'm sick of winning. Okay? Like, I want you'd be begging me for a little bit of loss.
And we all are now here sick of winning, right? just feeling so foolish that we didn't listen to Trump sooner.
I know, right? It's like, oh, he could be so sick of winning. So Joe really is. He's like, he's definitely one of those people in the audience saying, yes, like he wants to be sick of winning. So he is sick of winning, and he wants a little bit of loss in his life so he can go to tribal council and start gnashing his teeth and cutting the cloth and getting a chance to play Survivor, because he didn't sign up for this kumbaya bullshit. He goes on to say that it's paradise right now. People are in love got love goggles on and they're giving each other back rubs. And I'm not here for that. I came to win $1 million. And he doesn't, basically, Colin, he doesn't know how good he has it right now.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering, it sounds to me like Joe is really focused on the game in a spot where others are not. And we've seen a bald man out there hunting all over the place for idols and seeming to come off like a crazy person screaming in llama at future jurors, go on to win this game. Do you feel like Joe has Tony upside? Could he pull this off?
Yes, I do. I feel like it's a little bit too neat and tidy for me to accept right now. But on, you know, if you're holding a gun to my head, I do feel like that he could win the game. I do feel like that he is savvy enough in order to get himself to the end. Obviously, he has an idol in his pocket. I am very nervous about the fact that he may have two idols in his pocket or even three idols in his pocket come merge time. So there's something to be said for that. He doesn't seem to be annoying people too much. It seems like the tribe was going to target him primarily because of the fact that he had an idol, although I do know that he had that scene, obviously, where he threw the food away, and well, that was him, right? Who threw the food away?
Yeah, and, the potatoes. Was annoyed.
Yeah, so, I mean, but we don't know. Like, I mean, did they just pick that out of the air? I mean, was that just something that, you know, he did and he's never done it since? Did they especially try to make it look, you know, damning to him? But, you know, he will need to watch his attitude a little bit if he's going to want to continue to play the game a little bit easier as far as this swap goes. Because, look, we're pre-merge right now. You can't be like Tony. Even Tony, pre-merge, was a little bit calmer. You know, like he definitely made some moves. Obviously, targeting Cliff Robinson was definitely a move of Tony's. But on balance, he was a little bit calmer with the people that he was with. And he just made sure that he knew exactly what he wanted to have done. And he wasn't too angsty. I feel like the idol or idols, if he gets a hold of another one, is best used post-merge, where there's a lot of different dynamics happening. And, you know, people are looking to make a decision in something like that, where you're like, oh, I have an idol, come with me, you know, at least you know it's here, so like, let's go with this person. That could be something that people could grab onto, all things being equal, during a merge.
No, totally. And you know, one thing about Tony is, as the Braun tribe was winning all of those immunities early on, Tony was out there fist pumping every time he was safe.
Yes.
And meanwhile, by the way, Joe, despite having an idol, it seems like his whole tribe, and granted they're not going to be his tribe for much longer, but we got a whole subplot. Basically, the whole story at the Healers was how Joe was going to get blindsided if they ended up going to a tribal council. So it would have been incredible. I'm sure had they lost a challenge here and Joe had gone and gotten blindsided at that vote, I'm sure all of that secret scene would have made the air about how miserable he is winning the immunities.
Oh my God, I'm wet just thinking about it. Like, I was so bummed when the Healers won immunity. I'm sure everybody else was too, because we got all this buildup of a lot of foreplay, Colin, about, you know, this is what's going to happen. We're going to blindside Joe. We're going to split the votes. And if he doesn't play his idol, then we'll send him home. Like, I was ready for that. And then we just, it was like, it was gone in an instant. Like, there was no, nope, we're not going to do that today. You're going to have to wait for that. So I have Survivor blue balls right now. I want to see Cole and Joe go at it. I want Joe's feet held to the fire, because the only time that I really enjoyed Tony Vlachos was when his feet were to the fire during the merge. When he, in the first episode of the merge, when he did not have the numbers, he wasn't sure he did, he was a lot more likable to me. Obviously, I loved him during Game Changers because he was a complete nut. But I'm saying, you know, like, I didn't like Tony as much when he was fully in control and just could do anything. He didn't bore me, because Tony never bores anybody, but I found him more relatable when he was in danger. So
right. It's a lot more fun watching him scramble scramble his way out of these precarious positions, versus he's got two idols and the other people don't even know what one of them does, and he can just, and Jeff's gonna help him get away with it. Like, that's not nearly as much fun.
Yes, it's not nearly as much fun. I liked him, like, having to talk to Sarah Lucina back in the day, where he was, like, trying to explain why he said top five. So, you know, top five, baby, top five. So, you know, he wasn't a particularly good liar, and I liked seeing him struggle. I liked that. I was like, well, can he get this done? Can he get her to vote with him? Obviously, Cass came in at the last minute and saved him. And there's a little bit of history about who really did that. Was it Tony? Was it Trish? Thank you. I remembered her name. I remembered her name, Colin.
You're
welcome. I couldn't remember her name. Yes, I could see her, but I couldn't remember her name. Anyway, insofar as Joe goes, he's going to have to just keep it under control a little bit post swap and turn it up a little bit post merge. But am I buying that he's a potential winner? Yes. And that's, here's the thing. We're going to get to a few other people like Ryan, like Devin, like Allie. There's a lot of potential winners this season. People that I like, people that I respond well to, even somebody like Joe who is annoying me. I do hear through the confessionals how much he cares about his family, how much he wants to win the money, what this means to him. He's a fan of the show. He's not a recruit, to my knowledge anyway. He seems like he really just wants to be there. And even somebody like that who's annoying me, again, I always said this about Josh. As much as Josh annoyed me on Big Brother, and he did, I always knew in my heart of hearts that he was a fan of Big Brother, that he knew who Aika Wong and Dimitris were from Big Brother Canada 5. And anybody who could identify Dimitri like sight unseen, that told me all I needed to know about him, that he was like me, that he was a nerd. He was a super fan of the show, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody like Joe, who really like lives and breathes this game, I even the things that annoy me, I sort of like am enjoying him at the same time I'm annoyed by him because he's such a fan of the show.
Yeah, well, to go back to something you were just mentioning, I love that we have, by my count at least, I still have at least 7 or 8 people in there as very viable winner candidates. And to go back to Australian Survivor, that's what I would say is the number one thing that show has going for it is, not the most recent season, but the one before that, the winner edit was so just completely random and out of nowhere. Like, when I stopped watching the season with like 10 or 11 people left, I would have had the eventual winner as the clear bottom of my list among eventual winners. And from that point forward, and like in this newer season, every single person was constantly alive for me, with one exception. About halfway through, I ruled one person out and was thankfully right, even though it was very close. I think that is the best thing that at this point in my like Survivor viewing career, a season can have going for it in real time for me, is a lot of really compelling characters, any of whom could potentially win.
Right. So let's talk about it really quickly. Let's take a look at the Healer Tribe. Who on the Healer Tribe do you think can win the game? For real, like, hold a gun to your head, can they win the game?
So what I'm saying is, like, there are people on the Healer Tribe, for instance, I would say, like, Mike or Desi. I would not bet my pinky that they are drawing dead, but I would be pretty surprised at this point if they won. I would frankly say Cole would be high. I'm certainly not ruling Cole out. I think he's a very viable candidate. I'm certainly not ruling Rourke out at this point, even though she had a quiet episode.
Really?
Too. I think Rourke is alive, man. In the world where we've seen some winners get off to slower starts recently, I definitely think Rourke is not drawing dead. Like I said, I think Jessica is in there with a chance, and I definitely buy that Joe's in there with a chance.
Okay.
How about you for the healers?
Basically the same people. I can't see Mike winning the game. I do give Desi a little bit of a chance if she has a bit of a Michelle arc and, you know, comes alive later on. But she also has been really, really invisible. Rourke also, for me, been really, really invisible. I know she's a fan of Survivor. I know that she's like a nerd like us and she gets into all the strategy and she's got plans. I've listened to her pre-show interviews. So I want to root for her. But on the other hand, I've just been getting nothing. Basically, the three main talking heads on the Healer Tribe, Joe, Jessica, and Cole are the people that I have in there with a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
And I
may be seeing what I want to see with Rourke.
Yeah, I think
in total fairness.
It.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
I think you've got the Survivor goggles on, Colin. Like, it's not the love goggles. You've got the Survivor goggles on where you're like, oh, she's a fan like us and we want to root for her.
Yeah. And then over on the Heroes Tribe, I certainly have Chrissy, Ben, and Ashley all in there.
Yes, Chrissy, Ben, and Ashley all in there, and I want to live in the world where Alan also wins the game. insofar as the Hustlers go, believe it or not, I buy everybody. All four of them. I think all four of them can win the game, even Lauren. I do feel like there's a path for her. She had a secret scene that was probably one of the best I've heard in a while, where she talked about the fact – and it was too long for me to play for you guys, but she talked about the fact that she was looking for the right time to make her moves in the game. She's a fisherman. She has to go out, you know, when the tide is right. Is the tide hot, low? Is it high? There's a certain time to catch a fish, and in order to catch that big fish, you have to make sure that you fish at the right time. Likewise, she was talking about her relationship with Allie in the game and how far she wants to basically probe that relationship. And so I know we're not talking about Lauren. I keep going back to her, but because I do really enjoy her on the show. And I was glad to see that she survived this vote. But to everybody on the Hustlers tribe, I feel really, really good about. So that's four people in that tribe, three people on the Healers, and three people on the Heroes tribe. So that's 10 people in the game. Yeah. Out of 15 people left that I feel like have a chance to win.
I don't disagree with you. I think all four of the Hustlers are in there with a chance as well. Although I would say I think Lauren is much more likely for me at this point a losing finalist than a winning finalist.
Well, I can see that as well, but I again, it's like it's the reverse of Alan. I don't want to live in the world where that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen that enough. You know, I don't want that older woman to be a losing finalist who nobody respects. Like, I don't like go out fourth then if you're going to be like that. You know what I mean? Like, or go in there and, you know, basically say, give me the damn money. That's what I want from somebody like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. So let's get into quickly some of the lower key healers that we haven't gotten to see as much from. Let's get into Dr. Mike here. Do you feel like Mike has still the upside of like a David Wright story arc as potentially in play? Or do you feel like he's headed more towards the David Sampson trajectory soon?
Ooh, I want him to be David Wright. I feel like he's more David Sampson. I feel like he doesn't relate well necessarily with people. I mean, certainly anything that was going to cause him to be saved and Joe to be voted out of the Healers tribe was, to my knowledge, nothing to do with him. I mean, it wasn't because they liked him better or they wanted to save him or they thought that he was important. They were just like, well, we want to get rid of Joe and we're willing to gamble with Mike's game and split the vote in order to see that happens. I mean, so there wasn't anything that he's doing well. He doesn't seem to relate to people. I don't know if he's a bit of an uppity guy or maybe he's just a little nerdy or maybe the fact that Joe has been successful in putting a target on him insofar as the idol goes, but something hasn't gelled. And I feel like he could be in danger even in a swap if he gets onto a tribe with some people and they're like, well, this is the obvious odd fish out, and he goes because of that. And obviously the fact that he's been honest with them, I don't know why. Like if I had – well, I mean, you know, if I was – I was going to say if I had money, but if I earned my money, if I was the doctor. And for those of you who don't know, who I my partner is a physician and does pretty well for himself. So that's why I was laughing. But I would not have told everybody that I'm a doctor. I mean, make it something that's tangential where you can still talk about your life. Make it something like, you know, I am a physician's assistant.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you ever do get into the Big Brother house, what does your partner do? Are you telling people?
I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. I think it would be very hard for me to lie, but I think it would also be very easy, to lie, because that's something you have to lie about for 90 days. It's not just like a one-time lie, you know? But it also would be somewhat easy for me to say that, you know, yeah, he does that, but he puts me on a budget, and just because he makes money doesn't mean I have it, you know? Because in some ways, that's true, you know? Mm-hmm. I have a budget, just like everybody else.
Yeah, just like everybody else. Yeah. Do you feel like if things can break Mike's way, that he could be in there with an actual chance to win? Like, to go back to your big question from the draft, could he win a jury vote?
He could win a jury vote if he's able to relate to these people enough. And I loved it when he was talking about his son in the first episode, when he talked about how, you know, he loves this game and he watches it with his family. And even his son said, you know, Dad, if you're out there, make sure you go looking for the idol. Like, the more he can bring that sort of talk into his jury speech and his answers to their questions, I feel like that makes him relatable to the people on the jury. Somebody who's warm and fuzzy, who they want to give the money to, a family man who would do something good with the money, you know, put it towards his kid's education, make a donation with it, whatever. I mean, whatever he says he's going to do with the money, you know. But I feel like it's somebody like him who I feel like can change the perception of the people on the jury if he's able to just open up a little bit, because I liked it when he did that.
Yeah, I think Mike has going for him people probably have a pretty strong first impression or like pre-first impression of how they think Mike is going to be. And then if he exceeds that expectation, I think that tends to benefit people, you know, benefit that kind of person who can exceed the impression that people just assume he's going to, you know, how they assume he's going to be. And I'm definitely here for Mike. I hope we get to see more of him, and I would love it if he could be someone who is an endgame player, because I think he could be a really fun and different TV character than the rest of this group.
Yes, I am a little bit nervous that we haven't seen more of him. Obviously, the first episode was his starring role, so to speak. In the last two episodes, he's basically been invisible. But on the other hand, he's not been invisible as a few other people on his tribe, so there's that.
Yeah, let's go over to the RHAP connection, I guess slightly. Simone was also an RHAP connection, but another known super fan out there, Rourke, seems to be Twitter's player of the season. Although when I mentioned that I like Rourke, Brent, you seem to be a little lower on her, as in terms of a winner candidate. You feel like we're not just seeing enough out of Rourke, or she's not doing a good job with what we're seeing, or what?
I don't know. I'm not even sure. I mean, you heard me on the LFC podcast. Like, I couldn't even tell this bitch apart from Jessica. Like, I thought she was the same person. Mm-hmm. Like, when Cole's talking to her, I thought she was Jessica. So, like, I was like, who are you and why are you on my TV right now? So, okay, look, I'm here for you, Rourke. I've read your Twitter feed. I've listened to Corinne. Obviously, I know you're a fan of the show. And I've listened to her pregame interviews and all those secret scenes. And I feel like she's got strategy coming out of Yin Yang. But I haven't seen any of it on the show. So in order for it to be, like, canon to me in some ways, I feel like that there has to be a little bit on the show. I know I've praised and damned a few other people based on some things that were in the secret scenes, and that's certainly true, but there was stuff on the show to back that up. It was basically like corroborating evidence. But with Rourke, there hasn't been anything there, and I'm sort of left wondering, does she, you know, I think I said on LFC that she gets swap fucked, that there may be a point in time where she just like episode 4, it's her coming out party, mm-hmm. and girl, bye. You know, hopefully that doesn't happen to her. But I'm left to wonder, like, what is her place in the game? Because they're not really showing much of her, and they're not showing me much of Desi. These two people are just really, really invisible right now. And they're both people that I feel like, on balance, the show would want to use more. So why is that? Is that because they're late gamers? And they, you know, we're going to see a lot more of them later on, but I feel like even then they'd want to build a little bit of chemistry with the audience right now, if that were true. You know, my honest feeling on Rourke right now is either that she gets screwed in a swap, or that she's just on the wrong side of the numbers at the merge and is like the first or second juror. That's how I see it right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably being too generous with both Rourke and Desi to be considering them realistic winner candidates at this point, just based on how little we've seen relative to a few of the other higher profile characters. But I do just feel like what we've seen of Rourke has been really solid stuff. Like, the scenes aren't totally devoted to her, but when she is put in there, it's usually interjecting with some kind of what I would argue is like insightful, thoughtful kind of narrative about whatever's happening. And at least for me, on a team that hasn't gone to any of the tribal councils yet, I am not willing to rule her out just yet. I feel like it is not remotely outside the realm of possibility that this is just a slow start to a game that hasn't even gotten off the ground yet. There's nothing to show of Rourke's game because maybe she swaps on to a tribe with the people she's working with down the line, and she just hasn't had a chance to form those bonds yet.
Yes, and Jeff Probst has also said that. He said, I mean, I don't know if he said specifically, I just know that he said that it has a great ending to this season. So so that leads me to believe, okay, well, the beginning's a little slow then, is what you're trying to say. So if that's true, then maybe there's something to be had here for Rourke. Look, here's the thing. For those of you people who are fans of her, I think she's really, really freaking awesome. Like, I listen to her interviews and I'm like, oh my God, I want you to win Survivor. I'm like you, Colin. I'm like, I think you're just fantastic. Like, she's up there with Chrissy and Ryan in terms of the people who I really, really enjoy how they speak about Survivor and just the way in which they go about their business. But on the show, she's been invisible, and I just – I'm nervous about that.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. I definitely I understand why there are reasons to be concerned about Rourke's long-term prospects, particularly as like a winner at this point. But I guess I'm just hoping for the best, and it's certainly possible, as far as I'm concerned, that things could turn around as soon as next week for Rourke. So let's wrap up on these healers. And what do you have to say about Desi at this point? She's certainly been the lowest profile of this tribe. But do you have any strong takes one way or the other on her?
How can I? Again, she's like Rourke in terms of I don't really even know much about her. She seems like a certainly lovely girl, obviously freaking gorgeous, beauty contestant. I love people like that because they're competitive.
Quick interjection here.
Yes.
Desi is the hottest survivor of all time. Lita tweeted this, and I completely agree. Desi is the hottest survivor that they have ever put on the show.
She is absolutely amazing. She's like a Disney princess. She's just gorgeous. And I see why the show cast her, because she's got a brain to back that up, at least as far as what I've been able to tell from this little bit on the show, from her secret scenes in the past, and then from the little bit I've seen on social media. That said, again, it's just like with Rourke, and I don't want to repeat myself, but I've seen no evidence of it on the show. She is somebody who Survivor doesn't have a lot of Desis on the show. They don't have a lot of they don't cast a lot of smart women of color who can present themselves in such a way to win a jury vote. I want to hear more from this person. I want to live in the world where she wins the game or has a shot to win at least. And I'm just not getting anything from them. And so it's like, well, why aren't you showing more of this person? Because she seems freaking awesome.
Yeah, no, it's disappointing. And I guess for me, I just have to chalk it up to the healers didn't go to any tribal councils, and
right,
whatever they had to show Joe finding the idol, they had to show probably people finding out about Joe having the idol, and they probably are going to show Cole and Jessica. And with, I mean, how much more screen time is there to go around, frankly?
Right. And the other thing, we got Joe's secret scene about how, you know, it's kumbaya around here. Everybody loves everybody. I can't stand it. There's too much love. There's too much winning, you know? So, I mean, Desi may just be part of that. She may just be having a great time. She thinks she's on vacation. I mean, I know she knows she's not on vacation, but she may be giving that vibe to the rest of her castmates. In fact, I think that's the vibe you want to give everybody. It's like, look, I'm not threatening. I'm not here to stab anybody in the back. I'm not here for the money. I just came because I want to have a good time. I want to have an adventure, and let's see where it takes me. So I'm hoping that that's what she's giving people, because if that's what she's giving people, then it's working.
Yeah. Let's move over to the Hustlers now, the tribe that we've seen go to two of these first three tribal councils. And I guess we have to start with your girl, I'm going to call her now, Lauren, who has come up earlier already, who I'm going to say has been doing quite well for herself through these first couple of votes. I know I forecasted her to go out there and not, you know, I would have thought it was a hugely low percentage shot that if she had to go to two of the first three votes, that she would still be there in time for the swap. But it seems so far like that was very unfair of me in that assessment before the game started. How do you feel? Like, is this Lauren actively doing a good job so far, or is she just lucky to be on a tribe with boots as easy as Simone and Patrick, or somewhere in the middle, or what?
No, I have a strong opinion on this. I feel like she's been doing a good job so far. As I alluded to about 15 minutes ago, I was talking about her secret scene, and it just hit me how much she's willing to stay her hand if she thinks it's going to be bad for her game. She was talking about she was doing an analogy as far as the fish and the tide and when to make a move in Survivor. She's obviously aware that timing is key, but it wasn't about timing to make a big move. It was about timing when to probe her relationship with Allie, when to say to Allie, you know, I want to take you to the end, or Allie, what is our relationship? What is the progress of our relationship going forward? I can't even remember exactly how she phrased it. I'm trying to remember it right now. She was basically, I know what it was. It was, Allie, what is our path going forward? And she always talked about it from Allie's point of view, not from Lauren's point of view. She said, you know, what can I say so that Allie understands that, you know, I want the best for her, and I want the best for her game, and I want us to go far together, and I trust her more than anything. I thought it was all about the dynamic in which you present the perception or the point of view, and I felt like she had it correct in terms of trying to make sure that this person felt like that Lauren had her back, and not that Lauren was looking out for herself. You know what I mean? Yes, exactly. And she was not having, or at least up until this point when she did the interview, she had not really had that conversation with Allie yet. So because the swap's coming, she may never get to have it. But she is comfortable enough with her relationship with Allie currently to trust it enough where she felt like she did not have to push. And even though we saw plenty of pushing on the show in terms of trying to get the target onto Patrick, I don't feel like she had to push insofar as her relationship with Allie, because I feel like that even though she does not relate to these people in terms of YouTube and strategy and being super fans of the show, she does relate to them in terms of I need to be seen as a hard worker, a no-nonsense person around camp who somebody can depend on and they can trust me, and I can be somebody who willingly trusts people and can be seen as a tool for other people. So I liked what I heard from Lauren, and I was very, very pleased, Colin,
yeah,
to hear that your tweet about Patrick being one of the worst players of all time came true when you tweeted out, you know, if Patrick gets voted off of a five-person tribe on a tribe where he knows somebody from back home, he has to be right up there with the worst players of all time. And then it happened like 5 minutes later. So, and I feel like Lauren had a hand in making that happen. I don't feel like it was just something where Patrick was an obvious boot. I feel like Lauren demonstrably and actively took part in that boot and was at least partially the main cause of it.
I know you make a very strong case. And in the last 2 minutes or so, I have come up substantially on Lauren. And I actually think, whether I was out there in real time just sweating the game as it was playing out, or even maybe right now, even getting to see the televised version, if I was doing just a last longer bet, not a must win, but just pick a person you think is the most likely to be in there for the longest, Lauren, with the possible exception of Chrissy and maybe Ben, would be the top of my board. Certainly if I was out there in real time, as knowing we're about to go swap, I would say Lauren is the front runner to be out there for the longest, because I really do feel like if she can hit that merge, she is going to be substantially underestimated and have a pretty easy ride to near the end game. And if she can stay on good terms with people and not commit many like just catastrophic game errors, I actually really am starting to feel like Lauren could be in there with a shot to win. Now that you really have opened my eyes as far as how she's viewing the game and presenting things through other terms and really through other people's eyes and putting in, you know, coming to people on their own terms and thinking about it in terms of a game. I've come up, I still think losing finalist is very much in play for her, but certainly so is winner now as far as I'm concerned. I hadn't been ruling her out, but much more so than prior to your very solid pitch on Lauren.
Well, the thing that Lauren's doing, and I don't even think she's doing this consciously, is she's one of these people who is not a smiler. She does not smile a lot. And because of that, let me back up a little bit. I want her to smile more. I feel like that would do her good. But the benefit of being somebody like this who does not smile a lot is that she's just seen as a workhorse. People are not fearing her as far as her strategy and, you know, what she up to. She's just seen as sort of a solid lady who you can trust, and she can use that against other people.
Yeah, if there's one thing women love, it's being told to smile more.
I know, right? Well, I mean, look, I'm looking at everybody else in the cast. Everybody else seems pretty, pretty happy to be there, and they always demonstrate it with a smile. I couldn't find one time when she smiled.
Yeah.
I mean, the only time where she smiled, I think, was at Tribal Council when she said that joke. Was it a joke? I don't know. About she never trusts a redhead in her life, and she sort of giggled about it, you know?
Yeah.
But she has a little bit of a scowl sometimes, Colin. So I don't know if that will ever work against her. But right now it seems to be working for her because she seems no nonsense. And given all of the big personalities in the game, I feel like that people will look at her and go, okay, let's grab her, because at least I know I don't have a crazy person when it comes to Lauren. I'll tell her the name of the person we want to vote off. She'll say, yes, sir, may I have another, and we can get from there. And I feel like that's not true, but that's how she's presenting herself to other people right now.
Would you say she has resting softball face?
Possibility. You know, did you know that she plays center field?
I may have heard or twice about.
Yes,
about...
I know. Gosh, I don't even know what the editors were doing. I don't. I don't think our friend Molly Schock from Rob's podcast patron group had a hand in editing any of the episodes this season. She may, I don't know, but I don't think she edited this episode. But if she did, I think she would have at least gotten rid of one of those. sayings as far as Lauren reminding us for the third and fourth time, hey, you know, I played softball and played center field for 20 years. I'm sure I could have fired those beanbags or those balls a little bit better than Patrick did. So, it felt to me like there are three different editors who all had the same idea, like, oh, this is a really good thing to do. Like, let's tell the audience that she played softball and that she would have been great and that'll make them relatable. But then, like, three people didn't talk to each other, and that's how it made it into the episode three times.
Yeah. No, I thought that was really funny. And actually, the way that that impacted me is when this vote was coming in, I was certain Lauren was about to leave. I thought the softball thing was showing how she couldn't let go of such a minor thing and how annoying she was being about the softball thing.
Yes, I was so thrown. You know, I know Rob Cesternino on the previous episode with Simone said that he bought that Patrick was going home. And I was like, you know, Rob, I love you, but like, what the hell? Like, I mean, there was no universe where Simone was not going home. Like,
Rob
needs to
watch more Survivor. I think we all are on board with that. Rob needs to watch more Survivor.
Rob, like, what were you doing? No shade of Rob, but this time I was thrown. I bought that Lauren was going to go home, and I was very, very pleased to see that Patrick was gone, because I never liked this whole, you know, they knew each other from back home, and they somehow made it onto the same season in the same tribe. I mean, when the F does that happen? You know, and I didn't want to hear about it. I didn't want to hear questions about it. I was like Rob. I was like so glad he got voted off. Number one, because he was kind of annoying, and I didn't feel like he was pretty vapid. There wasn't a lot of there. But also because I didn't want to hear these questions from fans talking about the fairness of the game. So I'm glad that that was gone. Lauren, on the other hand, like I said, Patrick seemed very, very concerned about Lauren's prospects insofar as, you know, wrecking havoc on other players. So let's see if Ryan or Devin or Allie have to pay the piper for choosing to keep Lauren in the game. I mean, I'm also very intrigued this insofar as how Allie was convinced of this. Like, ultimately, like, whose call was it? I'm sure you have the same questions that I do. It seems like it was Devin's call, but on the other hand, Ryan has been very, very forward-thinking in terms of who he wants to keep in the game and who he doesn't. The other thing that Lauren said in her secret scene, and I want to make sure I include this, is that the three people, or two people, that Lauren trusts are Allie and Ryan. Those are the two people. She said, you know, if I stay in this game, you know, I need to make sure that my relationship with Allie is strong and that we can work with Ryan. Like, Ryan seemed to be the given from Lauren's point of view. So I do think that Ryan and Devin have been hiding their relationship well.
Oh, wow. That's definitely very interesting. Let's move over to that quickly. Ryan has certainly been making a name for himself over the first three episodes of this season. And I gathered earlier on that you were not loving this kind of new Cochran way of framing his thoughts throughout all of this.
Well, he's had a couple clunkers in terms of the jokes that he's made at Tribal Council.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, girl, stop. Like, you know, like, it's like when Taryn tries to be funny, I'm like, you know, try again. Thank you for playing. I do feel like that there is some room for Ryan to play this game, because he seems to have a great relationship with Devin, something that I don't even know the show saw coming. Like, I mean, usually you see a guy like this and you're like, oh, he's going to be a loner, have to fight his way to the top. But Ryan is not even just a loner. He's a power player in the game, and he's got a ride or die with Devin. I heard Devin's secret scene. Devin is a believer in this ride or die with Ryan. Like, he trusts Ryan implicitly. Like, this is not a case of where the show is showing us a power duo and it's really like a different power duo that's actually in control. Like, I really do believe that Devin, more than anything, trusts Ryan in the game. I didn't hear from Ryan as much, but I heard from Devin, and Devin trusts Ryan. And because of that, Ryan's his place in the game is a little bit more secure for me. I do agree, as I said on the LLC podcast, that I do worry about Ryan in a swap if he gets, you know, in a bad position. I feel like he might be seen as an easy vote. He might be seen as a super fan or particularly schemey. But here's hoping that's not true. Again, stop it with the Cochran-esque trying to, you know, be funny for the cameras, trying to have a quip at Tribal Council. Like, it just doesn't sound natural. It sounds like a pre-made joke, and thus I respond negatively to it, because I feel like he's sort of like looking for camera time, which I really, really hate that. You know, I feel like, let me just back up for a little bit and give you guys some real tea. Like, if I ever got on a reality show, I know that the camera would be on me sometimes. But it would just be because I'm generally a crazy person who has a really, really volatile temper and is very, very emotional and wears my heart on my sleeve. But I'm not trying to be like that. I just am that. And Ryan, I feel like, is trying to be that, and that's what's annoying.
Right. I think with Ryan, it almost comes across as rehearsed a lot for me.
Yes, it does come off as rehearsed. Like I said, it sounds like a pre-made joke. Nobody likes that. Nobody likes, like, oh, you think you're the smart one. Oh, that was funny. You know, whatever. I know when something is preset. When I know when you thought of something ahead of time and you thought, okay, I'm going to say this to Tribal Council if Jeff asks me about so-and-so or something that happened in the challenge or something about our tribe dynamics. It just didn't seem to come from an authentic place, and that's where he may have trouble in the game. If he's not seen as authentic by the other player, if he's just seen as a 100% gamer, again, I do feel like the show wants to show us Ryan and Devin for a reason, so I do feel like they're long for the game. On the other hand, there is a slight chance that Ryan could go out in a swap, and that would be tough.
Oh, yeah, I think there's going to be at least one of these winner candidates that we're talking about that is going to go out soon for sure. They've gotten a lot better at building up the people who go out right around this time, I would say. And you know, while we may be coming a little hard at Ryan for some of the way he's just handling himself, like, as a character on TV, and the way that that's sort of deliberate, I would say, and comes across as such, it does really seem like Ryan is or has been part of the center of the strategic hub, and that people do feel like he's being genuine with them when it comes to their actual yes. relationships on the island, which I think is a very important distinction.
Yes, outside of Tribal Council, I like his demeanor and his overall attitude in terms of dealing with his tribe mates. Insofar as Tribal Council and also the confessionals go, I could do with a little bit less of that, but that's just my own personal pet peeve.
Yeah. Well, let's move over to his partner in crime here, Devin. Where are you on Devin? Because it seemed to me like Devin was the one who, in realistic terms, the way it was presented, was the one calling the shot at this last vote. But maybe that it's certainly not necessarily the case. Although Devin is someone I was very low on entering the season. I thought he was going to be like a Fabio type, and he has really surprised me as well in a good way. Where were you on Devin before the season started? Were you someone there was like a Devin movement preseason, and people were into him? And how has that evolved after actually seeing him play?
I was not part of the Devin movement preseason. I didn't see a lot of there's where's the beef? I know he's a good looking guy, but I've been talking about strategy and in terms of his thinking about the overall game. There just didn't seem to be anything there. I am wrong. I have listened to his secret scene. I've watched him on the show. He seemed, like I said, he emphatically trusts Ryan, which at this point I feel like is a good play on his part. He doesn't seem like amazingly smart or anything, but he seems like a sort of a dark-haired version of Cole, because he comes off as very, very wholesome. He doesn't seem schemey at all. He seems to want to just do really good for the tribe and, you know, perform well in the challenges, and realizes his overall value in terms of what he provides to everybody else, and he feels very comfortable with where he's at in the game right now. And it gives me good feelings to know that he is self-aware to evaluate that and in an objective manner and give us his assessment of it.
Which of Ryan or Devin would you say is more likely to win?
Devin, in a heartbeat. And okay. The reason I say that is because I feel like he would be a very easy person to win a jury vote. I feel he's very, very sweet. Like I said, wholesome. He doesn't seem like he has a lot of money. And he's somebody who I think would present himself well in terms of being somebody who is palatable enough for the jury to consider voting for. He also is articulate enough in order so they don't feel like they're giving their vote to a total dummy. Ryan, on the other hand, at this point in time, and he may change, but he seems to me as a little bit too smart for his own good, and somebody who maybe the jury wouldn't respect as much, or somebody who they may not even really feel like voting for. He seems like a nice guy, but it does seem a little bit put on at times. And, you know, look, we're only through three episodes, okay? So I've gotten three episodes and a few secret scenes here and there for each one of these castmates. So I'm painting with very, very broad strokes right now. This is so funny. It's not even a video podcast, and as I'm saying broad strokes, I'm like waving my arm like broad strokes. Like I'm painting with very broad strokes in terms of Ryan and what I can see from his game, and I'm looking at, you know, obvious errors. Obvious things that are great about him. The obvious things that are great about him are his overall demeanor in terms of dealing with his tribe mates and being seen as somebody who is trustworthy by the other players in the game. As far as his cons go, it doesn't seem like that he has an authenticity problem when it comes to an open forum discussion, and I feel like that may not serve him well long term. Devin, on the other hand, doesn't have that problem. He seems authentic, whether he's, you know, speaking one-on-one to somebody or he's speaking in an open forum at Tribal Council, or even when he's with us in terms of confessional. He seems like somebody that you would like to get to know and hang out with in real life and have a beer. And Rob always talks about how, you know, so much of Survivor is just like, who do you like? You know, who do you like more than anything? And I feel like that's very, very hard to dislike somebody like Devin, and so that's why I would give him the nod.
I think Devin would be an incredible Big Brother player, because it seems like a huge percentage of Big Brother is, can you just hang out and be cool? And it seems like Devin is very capable at that. Any other thoughts on Ryan and Devin? Do you feel like this is going to be a partnership that lasts for a long time?
Yes, although I do feel like there's more of a chance that they get split up with Ryan going home as opposed to Chrissy and Ben. Like, I feel like Chrissy and Ben are here for the long haul. I don't feel like they're going to get screwed in a swap. I have no reservations about that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Ryan and Devin, post-swap, girl, there could be problems. It's like Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost, like Molly, you in danger, girl. Like, there could be problems here for Ryan if he is on the bad side of the numbers and doesn't have Devin. I can foresee a confessional about, oh, I had it so good over at the Hustlers tribe, and now I'm, you know, trying to, you know, claw my way to the top here on this new tribe. And, you know, he could be a fourth boot. I mean, you know, there have been other great players in history, you know, all-stars, like, who were the fourth boot on their season.
Employers who were the fourth boot on their season. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And the other thing Ryan has going against him is, even the most casual of Survivor fans have heard of John Cochran and know that he won the game and that Jeff Probst loves him and that he was a great player or whatever. And Ryan is going to have to overcome that eventually.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know why. Well, actually, I take that back. I do know why. He basically looks like, in some ways, like Cochran with the turtleneck and the red. So I'm sure he probably just had he's on the Hustlers tribe. So obviously they're going to make him wear red. And he happened to have this one long sleeve shirt that gave him a lot of comfort and, you know, would keep him warm when he's cold. So I'm sure that's why it got picked. On the other hand, it isn't doing him any favors in terms of the Cochran comparisons. Again, you lose the canned lines, and I'm on board insofar as my viewing experience, but overall in terms of a gaming experience, I feel like he's doing okay.
Totally. Let's wrap up on the last hustler we have left in the game. Let's get into Allie, who is someone who I know a lot of people were very high on after the premiere, and I have continued to be pretty high on Allie. Where are you on Allie?
I was not very high on Allie. In fact, I probably would have picked her maybe bottom three insofar if I did a draft before the season started. And this was not having known a lot about her. I just saw her as somebody who, look, she's probably like a typical model / fame whore / YouTube-esque person who, you know, doesn't really care about the game, was probably recruited. But I have been very taken with her and how she has interacted with her other tribe mates. And obviously, I mean, let's call it what it is. A very big move to get rid of somebody you know in real life. Like, this guy lived down the street from her, he said in his exit interviews. And she cut him. Now, she may have had no choice. It's possible that Ryan and Devin were like, no, we want to get rid of Patrick, and she had to grudgingly go along with it. We don't know who was the mover and shaker in terms of this. It looks like it's Devin, but we don't know. But look, I have to feel like Allie, they have to have some buy-in from Allie in terms of willing to get rid of Patrick. I feel like if she didn't want Patrick to go, that she could have steered the ship in the other direction. So given that she didn't, I feel like that she supported this boot, and that's pretty amazing to me. What do you think?
No, I totally was blown away by this. The previous week when Simone left, I was not buying for a minute that Allie would turn on Patrick. But and similarly this week, like I said, I thought Lauren was just locked gone by that same logic of like, there's no way you're going to turn. This is a tribe of five people. And one of them is someone you know from home. And their confessionals, as far as I can tell, are constantly framed in terms of, I know this person off the island, and it's weird having them out here. And if you go back and listen and watch these first three episodes back again, and just imagine that they're being framed in those terms, everything lines up as far as I can tell. But no, I thought this was wild. And first of all, let's just dive into the fact that they wound up on a tribe of six together in the first place. I believe I heard in Patrick's exit interview, he didn't say a word about it, but that Allie ratted him out right away. Yet this still happened. How is that possible, Brent?
I don't know. I think that there must have been. I mean, she was talking about it in the pre-press with the, you know, Josh Wigglers and Gordon. I can't remember his last name of the world.
Holmes.
She was
talking for the record. Yes, for the friend
you.
Of the pod. We love Gordon Holmes.
Yes, I listened to his stuff. I love him. I just couldn't remember his last name. Anyway, she was talking about this. So given that, I feel like that. The show should have moved him over to another tribe or moved her over to another tribe. But obviously, you know, you move one person and then things start to change and maybe we don't want to have this person here or something.
But
I feel
Brent,
like they could,
he's not a
what?
Hero or a healer. He's a hustler, Brent.
She, I feel like that. Well, maybe you can't say she's a hero or a hustler. Maybe she, I mean, maybe, well, what does he do again? I feel
He owns a moving company.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he couldn't be seen as a healer or a hero either. So,
yeah, that's tough. Whatever. YouTube assistant, yeah. I guess healer. Like they're probably you know, calling for a lot of like manicure appointments.
I guess maybe that's it. They just couldn't feasibly do it, yeah. And that's why they didn't move him. Because I have to believe once they heard about this, they were like, "Oh my God, really? Like, how unlucky are we that these two people know each other, and now we have them like randomly? We're looking at, we know how the game's set up ahead of time. These are the tribes, and they're both on the same tribe. Are you kidding me?
To me, that I mean, that given that Allie is talking about this openly preseason, if I am production. There is absolutely no way this is allowed to happen. If we can't move one of them to another tribe, one of them's getting cut. There is no way two people who know each other in real life are going to be on the same season, let alone start on the same six-person tribe.
I haven't listened to Jeff Probst. What did he, did Jeff say anything about when he became aware of this? Because I know that she was talking to the press about this, but did the press alert the producers and say, hello, like there might be something here? Did she say, like, well, he was some guy, and I don't know what was said. I do agree with you, though. It's incumbent upon them to make the game as fair as possible. Once they saw this, they should have just said, look, Allie, you know him, and – you know, we're going to have to pull in one of these alternates and replace you, and we're going to get you on next season. But right now, this just won't work, you know. But they did, and look, I'm going to be real with you, Colin. They got so fucking lucky that she voted him out. I mean, they got so lucky. By the way, it's really nice to swear again because I can't do that over at Robin's podcast. For the most part, I work in ones every now and then, but I can't. But naturally, in my real life, I do swear. But, like, they got so freaking lucky because, like, I could see this being a recurring theme, and the show would have had to address it at some point, and they would have had to talk about it, and then there would have been more bad press about it. Like, how could Survivor have let this happen? Why did they not do something before the game started? And she just voted him out, and they don't have to deal with it again. So good for them.
I think, yeah, they got lucky. We got very lucky. Rob got very lucky that, as he's pointed out many times, he doesn't have to deal with 500 voicemails all week about how unfair this is. And quick sidebar, I love it. It's just about the RHAP, like, family-friendly policy. It's certainly not, like, set in stone, and it's so funny when, like, Sandra or June Song is on the podcast, and they just go crazy with the F-bombs.
Or Marvin, yes, the Marvin podcast. I was living for that. The thing that's more interesting to me is not necessarily the people who are being colorful with their language. It's how Rob responds
yes,
to it.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's like cracking up sometimes where he's like, it's like a nervous crack up, you know? It's very, very fun.
Yeah. So I guess I know you weren't high on Allie entering the season, but now that she's voted Patrick out, where are you on her now?
Very high.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, she's getting a ton of content on the show and seems to be doing well within the game.
She's just such a cool person. I like how she interacts with her tribe mates. Even Lauren really trusts Allie, and she trusts Ryan too, but she trusts Allie, and she wants to build that relationship. That tells me that Allie is being open and approachable enough where she can gather some a bit of an army in a way and make a run at this game. And she is not necessarily somebody who you're going to look at and say, oh, we need to get rid of her. You know, there's always going to be, you know, Devin, let's get rid of him. Or Ryan, he's a schemer, let's get rid of him. I feel like Allie will be able to hide behind all these people. I know that they're going into a swap, but I feel like she'll be able to adapt to any tribe. Again, she is somebody who I do not feel like would be in danger during a swap because she's really athletic, so she's not going to get cut for being a challenge failure. And I feel like she's likable enough where she's not going to piss off anybody, and she's also schemey enough where she's going to be self-aware to watch her place in the game and make sure she doesn't do anything that screws her chances at $1 million up.
Yeah, no, I think she, to me, is certainly one of the safer people entering this swap. It doesn't seem like there would be any real reason for anyone on her current Hustlers tribe, or frankly, anyone on the other tribes, to be targeting her right away, barring just a completely fluke draw or whatever. Although I would say, I was someone who was very high on Allie preseason and has been very impressed by her so far, although I'm starting to get almost kind of a merge boot vibe from Allie. That wouldn't surprise me at all if she is ultimately viewed like, I really just feel like Ben and Chrissy are going to come out on top at the end of whatever the merge dynamic is. And I could see Allie being the victim of that if she's the leader of, or like the most capable person on the opposing alliance.
That would be really sad because I really like her. I think she's very, very fun. She's somebody you don't see a lot of on Survivor. She's just got a little bit of pep in her step, and she's feisty, and I want to see more of that. That would be sort of akin to like RC when she got the boot and was like the first juror. I don't want Allie to go away because I feel like she's a really fun strategist, obviously female. I want more of that. I need more of that in terms of my Survivor. And It's when somebody has potential and they don't get to show it to us, I feel like that's the saddest story of all in Survivor.
Mm-hmm. So is Allie someone that you're still seeing up there in near the top of your winner candidates? If things can break her way, you could see her winning a final vote.
Yes, I do. 100% in a heartbeat. I would put her relatively high in terms of people that I think will win the game. I know what you said about Ben and Chrissy, and I do feel like that is something to be aware of. On the other hand, they're going to need other people to get there. She could certainly be one of those people. I feel like that she's trustworthy enough and approachable enough where people would want to work with somebody like Allie, and I don't feel like she is somebody who's seen as a threat. So why would you want to get rid of her?
Yeah, I'm definitely with that, and maybe I'm certainly ready to be very wrong about Allie being the merge boot. Yeah, what's up?
What are the cons to somebody like Allie?
I mean, I think the cons are, at a certain point, if she is correctly viewed as the kind of threat that I think she is, like if we are at the point in Survivor where Steven has been preaching, as you referenced early, where the more chameleon-esque players we now recognize are the bigger targets, if Allie is recognized as that person, as I think she is, as the one who could, if given an extra round or two of safety in a spot where you could have otherwise voted her out, either fade into the background or recover and turn the tables on you, Allie seems like one of the higher likelihood candidates out of the whole cast to make something happen if her back is up against the wall. And so if people identify that, I think that could be her potential undoing.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen because I need more Allie in my life.
I'm with you for sure. Brent, let's just roll through for me who you think is going to be in there in the end game. Who you think these major characters of the season are going to be?
I feel like Allie will be in the end game. I do feel like Chrissy and Ben will also be in the end game. I'm hoping that Alan somehow weasels his way to the end game because that would be really, really fun. And I think that would be an interesting game piece that other people would have to contend with. And I'm here for that. I do, even though I'm getting a little bit of overdose of both of these guys, I do feel like Joe and Ryan could potentially get to the middle of the merge, sort of the Zeke spot in his first season, where he, you know, was seen as a big gamer. He's like, that's the big target. Like, who's running this game right now? It's Ryan. I can see people saying that. Who's running this game right now? It's Joe. Like, I can see people saying that. So if they go to war, obviously there's some potential for fun fireworks there. And but I do feel like that ultimately one of them might survive. So you're probably going to get one of them at the end as well.
Who is your winner pick, gun to your head, today?
I mean, I feel like it's very hard to pick anybody other than Chrissy at this point. But I will, and I will select Allie. I just have grown to admire her and think that she is presentable enough in a jury vote where they could give her the money. And she's somebody who I don't feel like is going to get voted off anytime soon. Again, as I mentioned, I feel like she's safe in a swap. She's safe post-merge. The only time that I feel like she's going to go home is when, like, the gamers of the world decide to vote off the chameleons or the people that blend into the background who you know, basically shouldn't normally be afraid of. But the people who would be self-aware enough to know that are people like Ryan, who she's already in an alliance with. Yeah. So I don't feel like that is necessarily a danger for her at this time.
That's a good point. Are there any combinations of people that you're really hoping to see come together on the swap? Any dynamic duos you'd love to see?
Yes, I need to see Alan and Joe come together. I need them to work together. I need to see that chaos. I need to see that. It'll be a total circus. A total fiasco, Colin. That would be just lovely. What else do I want? I want maybe something like Ryan and Cole. I know that's sort of random, but it's like, you know, I heard you on the previous podcast say, okay, if these people were swapped off, like, would, you know, Jessica be in a relationship with Devin? Basically, you were calling her a whore. That's what y'all were doing.
No, I was – okay, for the record, I was saying how interchangeable the guys are, not that Jessica, the 30-year-old virgin, is a whore.
Well, it just like, what would happen if Ryan is with somebody like Cole? Like, would he be able to relate to him? Would Cole relate to somebody like Ryan? I mean, Devin certainly has, but Devin and Cole are two different people, so I would like to see that dynamic. And I also want to see what happens with Lauren. Does she stay loyal to the people that saved her this round? Does she view it as she was saved? Does she view herself – like, how does Lauren view herself right now? This wasn't necessarily evident in the secret scene. Does Lauren view herself as one of four? Or does she view herself as, I was fourth and I barely survived? Because if she views it in the former terms, I feel like she will stay loyal to the people. But if she views herself as, I barely squeaked by, then they got problems if they end up on a tribe with her.
Right. If she feels like she was, you know, despite what we saw on TV, if she was just told, okay, Patrick is the next boot, that's what you're told, go do it. Then maybe she has a little different feelings entering this swap than if she was the one really leading the charge there.
I don't feel like she would betray Allie, but I do feel like that Lauren would betray Ryan or Devin, and that could be problematic for them if they end up on a smaller tribe with her.
Yeah, definitely. Any interesting stuff from the secret scenes that you wanted to get to that we didn't get to?
I think we've pretty much talked about everything. There was another secret scene with Ashley where she was talking about the paranoia and how real that is once you get into the game. Again, I know we've heard this before, but it was interesting to hear her expand on that a little bit, and how even somebody like her, who you would think would be relatively safe within the game of Survivor as far as it currently stands with these tribes, even she feels like that she, has her mind always racing and her thinking of different things, and, you know, I don't want to piss off this person, and what does this person think of me? So I was heartened and a little bit worried, as I don't want her to be too paranoid, but I was also heartened that she is paranoid enough. Like, I mean, Tony always talked about the fact that his mind was racing a million miles a minute and he wasn't sleeping at all, and obviously that worked out really well for him. So I don't know if that works out well for everybody, but I am glad to see that somebody like Ashley is not sleeping on the job, and doesn't look like she is.
Yeah. Brent, at the end of the show these days, we tend to put a disclaimer out that we may get into some heavier edit stuff. I know you've recently become a bit of an edit watcher yourself a little bit. So for people potentially more averse to that, it's already been well over 2 hours, so I hope you've had enough podcast today. But Brent, so now would be the time to tune out. If Brent, do you have any stronger edit takes that you wanted to get into?
No, but I will co-sign your Chrissy. I sort of alluded to it. Then I decided, oh, you better not say that, because that was part of the editing thing that you talked about at the end of your last podcast with Dom, about the fact that because of this fake idol, Chrissy's not going anywhere as long as that damn idol's still in the game. Like, that's going to happen. We're going to get some payoff insofar as the fake idol goes, because the show deemed it worthy enough to mention a few times, and they wouldn't have done that if it was just something that she had like a souvenir in her damn bag. So we're obviously going to get something with the idol, and Chrissy is safe until that time. That's a bit of a downer as far as the editing goes, because I'm like, well, okay, you know, I know she ain't going nowhere right now, you know, so it's I don't really like that very well. They haven't, on the other hand, said anything about Ryan approaching Chrissy and making sure she knows that it was him who gave it to her and all that sort of jazz. We've heard nothing about that. So that leads me to believe that maybe we don't get that. And that's why I'm worried about Ryan and a swap. I know Rob talked about how, you know, that Ryan was somebody who, you know, looks like they're in it for the long term, but could be the victim of a really bad swap. And because we haven't seen any editing, it's like it's basically an admission by omission, if that makes sense. Like, the show is telling us that maybe they don't get to have that conversation because one of them isn't in the game, and it sure as hell ain't going to be Chrissy. So, Ryan, you know, girl, bye.
Okay. Interesting. Do you have a bold Josh Martinez pick that might come out of nowhere to win the season?
A bold Josh Martinez pick. Oh, you mean when I won the draft, when I picked Josh to win, as I do often?
Yeah. I hadn't heard that you had won the draft, Brent.
Yes. The Taryn lost. He's a loser. Like, he's, again, Taryn's like Trump. He's tired of winning. He wanted to lose some. So, you know, whatever. Who can win the game who is very Josh Martinez? I mean, obviously, Allen would be the guy, but I don't truly believe in my heart of hearts that Allen could win the game. I would love for him to. Who could – let me just bitch for a second about this. The thing about Big Brother is that it's an A or B choice. It was like, we can all vote against Paul. It doesn't matter who it is, but we can vote against Paul. On Survivor these days, it's pick one of these players. Pick, you know, it's one of the above. It's A, B, or C. So because of that, because it's a final three – I don't feel like there is as much room for somebody like a Josh Martinez to win. I feel like Josh loses in a final three with Christmas and Paul. I do feel like that's true. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to go through the players really quickly. The most out of left field winner at this point, it would not be very Josh Martinez, but it would be very unlikely, but I can still potentially see it happening, would be Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike would be the guy who I feel like we got a lot of him during the first episode, not a lot since. That's very winner-esque to me, at least old school winner editing. Got a lot in the first episode, not a lot since. He is a family man. He was seen as somebody who was very fun and likable, and you sort of felt bad when Joe was sort of bullying him a little bit and trying to get him to admit that he had the idol even though he didn't really have it. So I feel like that there may be a little bit of empathy for him as far as the audience goes. And I don't feel like people would be unhappy to see a doctor make more money.
Brent, any other fire Survivor takes that you wanted to get out there?
Probably not. I think let me just say that while Desi is certainly one of the most beautiful women I have ever seen on Survivor, Cole, I don't know how – I'm going to just be real with you. How the fuck do you get that lucky? How the fuck do you get that lucky to be that gorgeous with that body and that face and those eyes and apparently have more money than Jesus? I mean, like, I mean, I know that this is a rumor. We don't know this for a fact, but Corinne said on her cast assessment that apparently he's loaded and he got tons of money from something he patented or invented or whatever. That's just not fair. It's like a guy who I dated one time who had like had all this money and he was gorgeous and he had a great body and great job. and he had a big dick. And you're like, that's just not fair. Like, that, how can that happen? Like, I mean, like, life's not supposed to be that easy, you know? But Cole's got it, so good for him.
All right. Well, great stuff. Brent, you are, of course, on Twitter at OneLuckyGay. Thank you so much for taking so much time. Always a blast talking to you.
Always a blast talking to you too, Colin, and thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, anything you want to plug while we are still on?
No, but like I said, I'm on One Lucky Gay. That's one spelled out, O-N-E, on all platforms, Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter. I am tweeting. I was actually in a little bit of a Twitter fight earlier today with somebody who I won't name, but it was very, very fun. I like to give as well as I get sometimes, so you never know what I'll say on Twitter. I do try to keep it mostly friendly, like jabs, because I do represent Rob as a podcast and I never want to go too far. Like, if it was just me left to my own devices, I would have gone harder after Jason Roy at the end of BBOTT when he was throwing shade at me on Twitter. But given that I didn't want to make Rob look bad, I definitely, like, you know, put a plug in it. And so that's what it's like being somebody like me. Like, I feel like I could, like, if I was on a reality show, I feel like I could definitely contain my personality, even though people don't think I would be able to. Tarrant, I was like, you'd be the first boot and you know it. So I do feel like I would be able to contain myself, but I do have a fun time on Twitter.
All right. Well, always loving you on Twitter at One Lucky Gay one more time. The LFC covering every season of Big Brother over on RHAP. Brent, thank you so much once again. And thank you guys for listening. Until next week, I am at Colin Stone on Twitter. Dom, I suppose, is at DomHRV, even though he didn't do anything today. So I don't know why I'm plugging his Twitter. but we will talk to you guys with BB7 week 5 coming Tuesday, and then back next weekend, I'm sure, with more Survivor. So until next time, take care, everybody.